is it to the vision? That we have had in the heart, that has been given to you. And if there were questions, I'd like to ask anyone of what an outstanding question could be forwarded to the department. The department has worked out those responses. You see a document that says response to the PCT on defense and military materials, feedback, DOD strategy plan, presentation of TRIO. They've done it very systematically. There's a question, and then there's an answer to the response itself. Now, I just wanted to check with members. It will be like the first time you have seen that particular response. Because it's written down. Do you want us to have a presentation on it, or do you want to take it that some of the questions have been answered that you have raised with the department so that you can go to any other new question that has not been answered out of the questions that are in front of us? Yes, sir. Mayor?
Thank you, Chair. My suggestion is that the department briefly goes through the presentation and addresses each of the questions and their responses, and does so briefly, and that we then move on to questions. I'd also, Chair, before we start, like to ask you if I could address two issues. One is the issue of SCOPA, and the other is the issue of the Minister's legal advisor.
Those two issues have got no standing on my agenda today. They have got nothing to do with the agenda. The agenda is very clear and fair that you are making follow-up on the strategic plan. And SCOPA is not my committee. I responded like that yesterday, that SCOPA is not where I'm chairing. I'm chairing on the portfolio committee on military veterans, on defense and military veterans. So what I entertain is what is in front of me. But that issue, or even the second one, those both those issues are not on my agenda at all. So I would want to create a new agenda. On the one that you say, you see what I'm trying to work out is giving you enough time to raise totally new issues, you see. I hope honorable members are following. I'm trying to make sure that you get new issues on the agenda. I mean, if you're asking the department to repeat itself, you know, it might not help you. But these ones are written, there's a reply in front of you, you see. So you'll end up here spending most of your time going in circles, you see. But I wanted you to feel comfortable that the department has done its job, has given you answers. This can give you enough time to reflect and discuss those issues. But let's re-deal with new issues that have arisen, you see, out of the not only on the responses, but as we have said, that this is an ongoing discussion where we are trying to build capacity amongst each other, more than treating each other. So, if you don't mind, Honorable Mayor, if you don't mind, let me try to discourage the fact that the department should do a presentation. I'll take it that you have presented questions, you can have a look at it, and if there's anything new, you could raise. But, I mean, I'm taking that these are substantial answers that have been given by the department, which should be highly appreciated by all of us. Yeah. If you don't mind, I would like to take a ruling like that up, so that I give you enough time to go straight into other issues. But I would have taken then that you have at least had a look at the strat plan, and you are going to look at new issues. Okay. Can we then thank the department for the response that you have taken? The responsibility of making sure that you go through the questions that honorable members have presented to you and have given us a response. That is a good response. I mean, you setting a good precedent. And I think if you work in this particular way, we'll be able to go forward more of you. So what I will do now, I'll give you an opportunity to introduce the people that are with you. And they must all feel comfortable today. And I must say, so because of the strat plan, I'm going to allow quite a wide open way of engagement, you see. Because we want to conclude at the end of the day today that we are moving forward, the strat plan has been accepted and has been clarified most of the issues that are in the strat plan. I must say, we must also clarify the issue that you have raised, David, when we are dealing with the workshop, when you said that you wanted the strap plan to be kicked out. My sense is that there's no agreement on that particular issue. Members of Parliament have not approached me at all to agree with you on this particular one. So our starting foot is very clear that we're discussing the strat plan and we're moving forward to consolidate our position. Whatever issues you have, you have to raise them today here. I want to give you enough time within the strat plan to discuss as much as you can. That's why I don't want to do a presentation. Yes. So I'm just saying that rather than reopening a discussion that David tried in the workshop, I just want us to close it to say that we are going to commit ourselves here to discuss the structure and allow members of parliament to get as much clarity. I can see the Air Force is here, the Navy is here, NCCC is here, in the way I know them. There's quite a number of divisions that are here, which is an opportunity for you to raise as much issues as you can and clarify yourself. So I won't put time spent. I mean, we have been given quite enough time to come over here and engage ourselves. If you're not tired, I'll keep you here until tomorrow morning. If you're tired, I'll allow you to go home. Utatu Mlangi, your title doesn't change. You're talking from a position of veteran. But in terms of the law, you have to say Mr. Matanzi, my dear. Can I give you the opportunity?
Thank you, Chair and Honorable Members. Good afternoon to you. First thing, I would like to apologize for the Minister and her deputy. They are abroad on official business. I am Lieutenant General Titi Matanzuma, the acting.
It's very hot, sir.
It's very hot. Yes. It's not also the
true code. I'm Lieutenant General Titi Matanzuma, the acting Secretary for Defense. The members will introduce themselves quickly. We have Frank Benters and Peg Benters. We wanted to come to attend to the questions that were raised. So almost everybody is here who has something to do with the questions that were raised. And we are very delighted to have this opportunity. Next to me.
Good afternoon. My name is Dumisani Tata. Contrary to what the chair just said, that I'm NCCC, but today I'm just here in my capacity as acting chief of policy, strategy, and plan for the Department of Defense.
Chair, members, good afternoon. Bonnie Engelbrecht, acting chief director, budget management.
Good afternoon. Mamoloko Kugushi, defense legal services.
Good afternoon. I'm Nandi Pansaloba, Director of Defense Strategy and Plan.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and members. I'm Rear Admiral Bernhard Teutaba. I represent the South African Navy and my chief.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Vusumuzi Sindane, Major General and Acting Corporate Staff Division.
Good afternoon, Chair and Honourable Members. I am Chief Defence Material. My name is Rukuni Patel.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and Members. I'm Squire Masango. I'm the Head of the Office of the Deputy Minister.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I am General Chigi, representing Chief Joint Operations. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair and Honourable Members. Major General Mkholi Sipetane, Inspector General of the Department of Defense.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair Members. I'm Rear Admiral Junior Grade Alan Green, the Director of Military Strategy, the Office of the Chief of the SANDF.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Brigadier General Dries de Wit, representing the Chief of Human Resource of the Human Resource Division here today.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair, members. I'm Brigadier General Betty Leslie, and Director Planning.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. I'm Colonel I.J. De Clark, I'm representing the Observation.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and members. I'm Brigadier General Albert Johnson, representing the Surgeon General.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. I'm Colonel Van Oortwijk, the Planner at the Military Security Division.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and members. I'm Antoine Lutasani, the Military Health Service Budget Manager.
Good afternoon, members. I'm Wilkie Dupree, I'm the Army Budget Manager.
Honourable Chair and members, I'm Brigadier General Eric Ross, representing the Army.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. I'm Steve Ramsey, the Director of Strategy.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable members. I am Hans.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and members. I'm Sue Radkin, Special Advisor to the Minister of Defence.
Any other person that has not been acknowledged? Remember, as I've said to everybody, that we are going to allow a question. It's a time for questions to go arise. You might find that they will now and then go to some of the questions that they've already answered. But no, just you're an honorable member. It's finished. Yeah, I'm on here.
Thank you. I'm Emmanuel Mlambo, a member of the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans. Thank you.
I'm Mukare Matria, a member of the committee.
I'm David Manny. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans.
I'm a member of this committee.
Donald Smiles, a member of this committee.
Valeria Mabella, member of Defense Committee and Military Veterans.
You want to know members of parliament. Tara Blunt is not a member. That is Christelle. She writes about military.
I'm from Independence.
Yeah. She's in the kickstand, the Netherlands. So that's how you want to know her. And the other one is Peter, is our secretary in the committee. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
The reason why I was asking, sometimes there are questions that you cannot respond to in an open session. It may be that you want to know more about certain matters which we can brief you in camera. So this is why we wanted to understand, so that the questions that are coming, we are able to deal with them with you in camera or in open session.
I wanted to ask the Acting Secretary of Defense what criteria he would use in order to decide whether information can be disclosed or not disclosed to the committee.
No. You're asking the wrong person. You must ask me. I'm the one who's going to decide that. I mean, in consultation with me for this meeting, the acting secretary of defense would indicate if the question is sensitive. left members, because I really want to have an open session. But as I said, there is a bottom line between national security and democracy. And whenever the Secretary of Defense feels a little bit uncomfortable, members must not just answer, they must consult the acting Secretary of Defense. You see what happens in the delegation here. While you've got some privilege of being here, you still stand that there's a commander here who's in charge, and that is the acting Secretary of Defense. He will hint and indicate who is answering the questions. You don't just stand up and answer. And then he will then also verify with me if he feels that it's a sensitive question. I must be alerted quite at an early stage. I can't say journalists that will write about me more than the work that you are doing here. And Christian has got that to grab me potential. So the best is to consult with the acting Secretary of Defense. But we highly appreciate everybody's presence here. It shows that in a democratic society where parliament is the institution that they're accounting to, they're taking it quite serious. But I allow members of parliament to raise questions so that you could be able to understand and indicate. The Inspector General, you owe us a report. But we'll find the weapon.
Thank you, Chair.
No. Yeah, that's fine. I'm not saying respond now. I didn't say the commander is here. I'm just putting you, making you aware that we are coming around there to get you out.
I acknowledge that, Chair. Thank you very much.
Members of Parliament, here is the department. The strategic plan, you've had it for a very long time. I'm opening the table to you to ask questions, and you just have to take note of the questions if it reflects on your department and consult with the acting Secretary of Defense. Who do I have on my list? I know it's David. Is there any other person? Not yet. David, how many questions do you have?
Probably in excess of 30.
Okay.
So nobody's been here. Everybody's here. I don't know how many questions you want to ask.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you'll recall on the 21st of September 2009, President Zuma addressed the COSATU Congress. And at that Congress, he said, we take a position in favor of the deunionization of the military. We strongly believe this is a matter of national security. Now, the deunionization of the military is clearly a priority of the Commander-in-Chief. But I was surprised in the strategic business plan that deunionization of the military is not a priority of the minister. And nowhere in the strategic business plan do I find a plan to deunionize the military. And so my question to the Secretary of Defense is, what is the plan to deunionize the military? That's my first question, Chair. My second question goes to the effectiveness of money spent in the defense budget. Now, if you look at the strategic business plan for 2009, in that strategic business plan under air defense, we have budgeted 950 flying hours per year over the MTA. In the strategic business plan for 2010, the number of flying hours have been significantly reduced to 550, 250, and 250 flying hours per year over the MTF period. Now, the air combatability, the air combat capability sub-program requires that the Air Force deliver operationally ready fighter aircraft.
And my hypothesis is that the Air Force, given the current operating budget, is not able to properly operate the Gripen or the Hawk systems. And so my question to the Secretary of Defense is, what are, in respect of the Gripen system and in respect of the Hawk system, the optimal number of flying hours required per year, the actual number of flying hours budgeted for per year, and the shortfall?
Okay.
The second part of the question is, on 250 flying hours per year, how many pilots can actually be current or operational? How many jet pilots can actually be current or operational given 250 flying hours, given 550 or 250 hours, depending on what year you choose? How many pilots can actually be current and operational given the constrained flying hours? That's the air defense program. Then let's turn to the maritime defense program. If you look at the strategic business plan for 2010, there are on page 45, I think, we have four frigates and three submarines. Now, in terms of the maritime combat capability sub-program, the Navy are required to provide mission-ready maritime combat capability. Now, again, my hypothesis is, given the operating budget, the Navy are not able to optimally operate either the frigates or the submarines. And so my question in respect of the frigates and in respect of the submarines, how many of those vehicles in each case are mission ready? And by that I mean fully operational. And if all four frigates and if all three submarines are not fully operational, why are they not fully operational? I think that covers me.
Here goes the first question. I'm not going to allow them to answer you. What do you really say? Yeah. Don't want us to open that question because I really think that it's not. If that is the factor that we hear in the answers here, but I don't want to open something that I think is more upon the department. If it's not in the structure, it means that it doesn't affect the department. But I'll allow the union to see what the response comes from the department itself. Do unions affect them or not? But are you okay now with your questions that you have? Is there any other person who's got any question? Since there's no body, and I don't want it to be your process alone. Okay. There is in what in the strat plan. There's what he said that you need to take a view on assisting landward. That guy. Yeah, no, when it's you, I'm very patient. In the presentation by the former acting secretary, he says it's very much important that, or in the presentation in the structure by the minister, it says we need to be able to do something in relation to landward. Yeah, that would be your pitch. And the honorable, and forward by the honorable minister. He says that one, to be able to carry out this task, the DOT will be looking at ways and means of rejuvenating its landward. Fourth, is there such a plan? And how is that plan? If it's inside, there's a detail somewhere in the strat plan, give it to us. Yeah. What I'm reading is here in the forward by the minister. You see. Is there such a plan? Is it sensitive, say so, but if there are issues that could make the department aware or make us aware as members of parliament, give us some sense of exactly that there are plans to assist the landlord so that we know what we're talking about. That would be linked also to the issues of the border. The border itself. Does it mean that when landlord is having capacity, would we be able to be helping around the border line itself in how in what we have committed ourselves, the cabinet has committed ourselves to be able to do. This one you can't walk away from it. It is about the military veterans plan. Is there a plan about that particular division? If there's no answer, maybe we should find time to be told about it. But if it's, as it's being outlined here in the presentation about the military veterans, that they're supposed to be helping in building capacity of those that get affected, how is that plan? Do you have that plan here today or not? Or what can you be able to tell us? I hear there's quite a number of people from joint operations, and we have never had an engagement. I'll take it that from our side, we've never engaged in the joint operations. Be patient. But I'm just saying that speak to the issues. You are saying that peacekeeping missions are part of the foreign policy. In pursuit of the fight of defense diplomacy as a strategy, to rekindle territory, the part it says under the introduction by the accounting officer in the last paragraph down there. Do you have the strat plan? Because I'm using the strat plan basically to be able to get clarity around this question. So, and you see, the Department of Defense role as an honest peace broker has been provided a strategic position. That's what it says. Now, my interest is to know that what is Joint Ops doing? I mean, how are things going there? Do you have the capacity? Have you been able to? Does strategy plan talk to the work that they're doing at this particular moment? But also, sometimes you know that it is related to foreign affairs. How does that working relationship being shaped around that? So, I must say that as you outline the strengths that you have, because you see, still what the Acting Secretary of Defense has outlined. Defense foresight initiatives will be pursued that will realize a defense force that is capable of defending South Africa at any time by giving effect to the one force, core force, and growth force concept with an appropriate balance between regular reserves, public service, and members from the military skill development. Now that makes you to have of 106,500 reserves, that's what you're talking about, and all combined build the capacity of the South African Defence Force. I'm just interested to know, given that there's attrition, what is the capacity at this particular moment of the Defence Force overall? Do we have a capacity to be able to maintain and defend the constitution of South Africa? Would you be able to give us some details, if there are sensitive areas, take care of those areas, but give us a sense of what is the capacity of defense? It also goes along with what is being said there. The SNDF prepares capabilities, which include land, air, maritime, and military help annually to support UN and AU. What does that mean? How do you continue building that capacity to be able to help those foreign bodies? I've just read the minister and the secretary. What the ministry is saying, in the same page that I've put out there, that to be able to get out, since new military equipment was provided for the Air Force and the Navy in the first term of our democratic organization dispensation in the form of the strategic package, defense package, it is now time for the South African Army to be helped. Are you saying to us that you have this, capacity to defend South Africa because of the new strategic package? The effect to what we are hearing here from what the ministry is saying. We are raising these questions because also we should be able to appraise ourselves about the positive growth of the defense, and if there are negative things, you should be able to say them quite up. But if all of these things are positive, they have helped your capacity to be able to give us a sense of exactly how things are happening within the department itself. Your capacity through the arms package has been strengthened, or your capacity has been weakened. Give us that sense. If you say you are being seen throughout the world as a peace broker who's doing a very good job, give us that particular sense so that members of parliament and the broader public could be able to appreciate that within the strategy that you have been able to move a particular ground, and there is good progress in the work that you are doing. In that context, I'm raising these questions. I'll leave it with you, Mr. Matanzima, to be able to pick it up. Later on, it's becoming very difficult. I'll leave it in your capacity. If you do have sensitive questions, say so. But the one part that I think you should also give us a sense, it is about the developmental stage and your contribution to the source. That's what the minister says, and ensure that the defense force can contribute to the socio-economic needs of the country. And the first line to put forward in a developmental stage. I do sympathize with you, but I had hoped that these discussions have taken place within the military council. And it then means that there's a broader understanding of what that was. When the commander-in-chief gave the State of the Nation address, he spoke about the state of the nation. He spoke about the developmental stage. And within that context, we want to see what is the reaction and what is the understanding of the defense overall about that type of understanding. Do you contribute to the socio-economic needs of our country? I leave you there. I don't want to check if there's any other member of parliament who has got another question.
Just because there's no interpreter. So I'm assisting you, Chairperson, today.
Okay, that's right.
All right. Chair, the mandate of the Defence Force. I've read in the document, I cannot find it here in the set plan, but somewhere in the documents coming from the department, is that they say the foundation of the threat plan and whatever the defense is going to do is mandate driven.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
No, I'm looking for that plan to help you with
that.
Yes.
Now, as opposed to finance driven,
I think the department must explain to the committee today that if it is mandate driven and we see a decrease in the budget, what sense is there then to have a mandate driven sort of strategy? Because to me, you cannot decrease the budget if you say landward defense is a priority, air defense is a priority. So I want to ask the strategic planners and all those that deals with the mandate to please explain, because I cannot help.
I'll direct you to help your question to the introduction by the accounting office. If you look at the first paragraph there, I just hope it will help you. Yeah, that's what, yeah. It says, the medium-term focus will concentrate on the realization of a defense mandate-driven force design. Is that what you are?
Yeah.
And address right-sizing and rejuvenation human capital. That is at your first paragraph. I'm saying that in the introduction by the accounting officer, that was the acting secretary for defense. If you look at the line one, it is again my pleasure to present the detailed minister's policies provided in the forward. But then they say the medium-term focus will concentrate on the realization of a defense mandate-driven force design and address right-sizing and rejuvenating human capital. So I'm saying that mandate-driven has been used in that context. This is what you wanted to highlight from, to show that that's a statement they have made and you want to see from there on. How organized are they about their own mandate and how much do they understand their mandate? Is that what you wanted to say? You got it. Yeah. Is there any other member who wants to say something? Is there none? Do you want me to give another round? Okay, come back on it.
Thank you, honorable members. Chairperson, we have many members who are dealing with this question. We have allocated a slot to members. I think the first question you indicated that it may not be necessary for us to respond to that. So if we zoom straight to the following questions, we will start with the Air Force related questions by asking Mr. Bani Engelbrecht from our finance division to deal with that. Bani.
Thank you, Chair. In the presentation prepared, the second last slide sets out a comprehensive.
Yes.
Second last slide, if my memory serves me correct. There's a layout in tabular form on the optimal versus the planned flying hours. We've broken it down into transport, air, so forth. But to respond to the honourable members,
those are tabular addresses on the board. Yeah?
Sorry, I've just been told that it's not included in the handout, not in the presentation. But that to put the flying hours and specifically the 550 flying hours into context, and I refer to page, what is it, 40? No, it's a little bit at the back where we've got the 72 of the strategic business plan. It's important that members note the specific wording, the very last bit there, the air combat capability and specifically fighter capability, number of flying hours, 550. Yes, sir, at the bottom. There's the heading air combat capability. Fighter capability, number of flying hours, and just below that, it is the number of squadrons available, of course.
That does give me an opportunity to make sure that the members are present. That's it, all. It's in this book. It's in this book, it's page 72. Have a look at that book. If you are nearer there, you can see what's going on there. But I'm just saying that if you go to page 72, you see that's where the explanation is going to come back. Yes,
thank you, Chair. So it states it's a number of squadrons available according to force requirements. It indicates for the current the year under discussion 2010-11, it's one combat squadron with 550 hours. Now that is combat flying hours. That means actually performing what they are supposed to do. If I refer then to the slide, the very bottom line, there's a line called flying training. Now some of that hours is also allocated to both the, specifically the Hawks, because that's the lead-in fighter aircraft of the South African Air Force, which is primarily useful for training in preparation of going over to the Gripen fighter aircraft. So then to come to the, just to put the context in place, and the question is, as is indicated there, that is what is operational driven. So that was the requirement set by Chief of Joint Operations based on their determinations. The reason why it's moving from 550 to 250 and 250 is primarily because of the activities and support during the World Cup 2010, the Soccer World Cup Championships, to provide air cover in terms of our agreement with FIFA. So the remainder of the flying hours to keep the pilots ground, not only the pilots, but both the pilots, technicians, ground crew, and all supporting staff is then covered under flying training. So then, at this point in time, it's not possible to give specific numbers in terms of how many pilots are current and operational. That we didn't, that was not prepared for. But however, just to indicate, in terms of making sure that we use our funding optimally, it's not only flying. We have very, we have with the procurement of the Gripens and the Hawks, we have a simulators which saves us money but gives the pilots the capability to do actual flying as if they are busy with real-time flying. So that's part of the training as well. So that's just to ensure that the money available is used to the best way possible.
Sir, can I just double check with the Air Force server if he would like to add anything? You covered. Thank you. Sir, doesn't.
Right. I apologize, Jack. My question was, let me put it again, in respect of the Gripen system and in respect of the Hawk system, what are the optimal number of hours, what are the actual number of hours, and what is the shortfall?
Jeffrey, you again. The optimal number of hours is based on what is required by the based on the requirements set by the Chief of Joint Operations, specifically the 550 hours. That is what's required from an operational point of view. And in terms, if we look at, for example, the training, it is there's no deficit in terms of the training. So the training includes, there's no specific, the amounts or the number of flying hours per type of aircraft, that's not available at this point in time.
Thank you.
No, no, I was just saying that okay, that's fine. Okay, continue with that.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Just for the benefit of us not having all the mathematics ahead, looking at the optimal and the planned figures there, it is difficult for me to make a proper judgment, you know, and to compare planned with optimal in the event that I don't have sort of an average, you know, just to make a good judgment. Say, for instance, I say that look at the combat capabilities. There is a 550 plan. To me, the optimal, what is required, optimal, right, is the one figure. What is planned gives me a shock. Say, no, it cannot be. What is going to happen? It is, in terms of my own thinking of military precision, it's not right. It is not good. So I think the figure there without an analysis is not helping us. Unless it is confidential information, then it must be put in that way.
Yeah. No, as I said, I've given them a privilege of hinting when they've got confidential matters.
Yeah.
But nobody seems to say that there's a problem. So I'm going to ask you that they are going to answer you. Put your question squarely, say, with no fear. And then, thank you very much. David, did you have anything to add?
Just a follow-up, Chair. We need to get to the bottom of this because I think this is a very serious matter and talks to the dilemma in which the Air Force and the Defense Force find themselves as a whole. Now, on page 20 of the briefing document that we were given out, under the air defense program, you refer to, and I refer to the bullet points, total hours 24,844, excluding basic flying training hours 5,825, and training hours on the Hawk fighter system.
David, for the sake of members and
page 20 of the.
There's a question and comment.
Correct.
I'd like to refer to those two. Let me just make sure that the members have got what you are so that we don't rush on. It's on page 20 on the document that we said we were given as answer. That's where the statement is placing its argument on. Okay, proceed.
If it is correct that we have budgeted 2,000 hours for the Hawk system, will you then confirm that is half the number of hours required to optimally operate the Hawk system? My question, Chair, was if we have allocated 2,000 hours to the Hawk system, as seems to be indicated on slide 20 of the presentation, will the Secretary of Defense confirm that is exactly half the number of hours required to optimally operate the Hawk system? That's the first follow-up. The second follow-up, Chair, is if I am correct that on average, in order for a fighter pilot to be operational, he or she would have to fly approximately 100 to 120 hours per year. If that is true, then it would seem to me that in this financial year, there would be barely enough hours to keep two pilots operational.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Engelbart will continue to do that. I note that we do not have a representative who can since you all the details of the flying, and maybe we can give you a written response, a full response to that, after consulting the two of the airport. But with regard to budget issues, Mr. Endopak will give you an answer.
For you should, would you accept that, that the acting Secretary of Defense says that every detail in relation to that question is in front of them? They also just have to verify that information with the Chief of Defense, I mean, or in the Air Force. So what they will do the good work that they have done at this particular moment of taking the question and going to the department and come back. Is that okay, Mr. Smiley? Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. You, so that you should not start the answer to one question, we'll give you the opportunity to answer that question. We will give you a total feedback of what you is outstanding there. Do you still want to do some answering, Mr.? So you are going to get a full answer to the question itself. You know how you have done it. You can see that I complied. That you gave me a question. I sent it to the Secretary of Defense. Now I've got a full book in front of me that comes to every member of Parliament. You must understand some of us have not been in the Air Force. So this is also a learning curve for you to understand. Mazia is come from a self-defense unit. So they don't know much about Air Force. Let's go to the next question.
So the next question relates to the Navy readiness, mission readiness. Admiral Totenberg will deal with that one. Thank you.
Honorable Chair and members, with respect to the Navy, slightly different. First of all, I'd like to state that we are a force preparation entity, so we're always in the process of working towards ensuring that our capital assets are actually mission ready. The second thing that I need to say in order to provide context is the fact that a ship goes through an extensive operational cycle. Therefore, it will have maintenance periods. Some of them will be as short as 3 weeks, some could be as long as 6 months at the time. The third contextual argument that I need to put on the table is that we have an internationally benchmarked system of defining our readiness. It is called a level of capability. The SAS Protea, our survey vessel, is presently in dry dock, being readied for mission readiness during World Cup 2010. She has no level of capability at the moment because she cannot go to sea today. However, the moment she comes out of dry dock, she will be tested in order to certify her as going safe or being safe to go to sea. So the next level of capability will be safe. She will go to sea and she will do a training period to work up her crew and marry it and integrate it with the ship, after which time she will be tested in accordance with a testing regime to declare her basically ready, therefore BLOC, basic level of capability in terms of being able to fulfill the basic missions that are expected of that vessel. However, there is a further level, which we call the functional level of capability, which is the highest level of capability, which is for war. A frigate at SLOC, at functional level of capability, will have all its missiles, it will have all its ammunition, it will have all its food, all its fuel, all the people on board will be qualified for the post in which it is at any given time. And that's the highest level. It is, of course, a very expensive level to keep a ship at that level. Therefore, in terms of the SA Navy strategy as contained in the Level 2 business plan, the South African Navy will maintain one frigate at SLOC, at
full functional level of capability. Two frigates at basic level of capability and one frigate at no level of capability, which means that one frigate will always be in a maintenance period whilst the other three are in one of the other states that I've mentioned. In terms of the submarine, the submarines, we will have one at functional level of capability, one at basic level of capability, and one at no level of capability due to maintenance being done on that vessel. In order to achieve that, we have in our level 2 business plan the appropriate number of sea hours required to maintain our vessels at that mission readiness level.
That's the first step also to the fact that why you call me a she? I'll send that to you for
I can give you the Navy answer for that. Sir.
Can you please give me that one?
I'm not sure that it's gender sensitive, and I apologize from the start, but I think you know me.
Yes, I know you very well.
We call a ship she because when she returns to port, she heads for the boys. The older she gets, the more maintenance and effort she requires.
Yeah.
And I could carry on too, but I don't think this is politically correct.
The next question will be answered by the representative of the Army Brigadier General.
So with regard to the landward capability, I think the landward capability is in place. I think we've got six battalions on standby. We can rotate them, we can sustain them. I would, however, like to say to you that the UN works on a principle of 5-to-1, deploying a battalion each and every 6 months, or only deploying a 6 month period in a 3 year period. Our operational tempo is much higher because we have less forces available in that regard. But the long and the short is, we do have the forces available, we can deploy, we can support the external operations, we can support the internal operations being Operation Corona, we can provide the Chief of National Defence Force with a reaction force type of capability, and we also have certain reserve capabilities in the country that we can deploy in company if required.
Can you help give more facts to, let's say we are dealing with issues, the most specific during this period, that are related to border safeguarding, safety and security, disaster and aid and relief, and we're dealing with search and rescue, and we're dealing with great care. Those are some of the priorities that we have identified. What is your capacity in relation to that?
Honorable Chair, currently for internal operations, we have 4 battalions available for that. Planning for Operation Corona is still in place at this stage, and we will have 2 battalions deployed, and the capacity for the immediate deployment is 2 battalions. We will have that available, and we will deploy them according to the scheduled plan. The other 2 battalions to address all the rest of the internal issues, as well as the rapid reaction force from the reserve, from the Chief of National Defense Force, which has the parachute capability that can deploy wherever it may be required. So, the long and the short is, we have 2 for Operation Corona, we have 2 for internal reserve, and we have the rapid deployable capability of the Chief of the National Defense.
So you are saying that the South African citizenship should feel quite comfortable that we do have the capacity in the SNDF to be able to, in the 2 months that we have the 2010, the FIFA 20, sports events, you have the capability.
Sure.
I think it's in the planning, and I think we provided
that.
Okay,
that's
right.
Can I give you an opportunity?
For purposes of the question, perhaps can we be informed as to how big is the battalion?
So the battalion constitutes more or less 1,000 members, 1,100, 1,200, depending on the battalions, because you get mechanized battalions, you get motorized battalions, and you get parachute type of battalions. But I think what is important is that you can deploy out of battalion, you can deploy 3 companies with a strength of more or less 157 people as such. Each and every company then is subdivided into three platoons of a strength of 36 people each, and each and every platoon is subdivided into sections where you deploy 10 people in each of the sections. So depending on the task that they have, a good example for border safeguarding, you can break them up into sections and you can cover a wide range with all the different sections that you have available. However, if you go more to conventional type of operations, you would keep this grouping together as a battalion and you will utilize it as a unit per se. So depending on what type of operation you have taken, it will tell you what the capacity needs to be.
Given that there's no other one, let's proceed.
Thank you, sir. The next question will be dealt with by Mr. Tanga. However, I would like to apologize for the absence of the DG for that department. Is what I have to say. Thank you. Over.
Thanks, Jefferson. I think in light of what the conflict has said, I'll just provide just some very limited information on that. The question was, is there a plan for the establishment of this department? Insofar as our plan is concerned, the one that has been considered now, if you look at page 56 of that, there is an area where it deals with military veteran support services. For all that is being stated there is that you recall that the Department of Military Veterans, I think, is an offshoot from Defense Department. And as such, it grows out of Defense Department. And what we are saying in the plan of the Department of Defense is that at the present moment, there's work underway to ensure that the structure of the department is put into place, which will therefore inform all other subsequent activities like your budget as well as the plan. So at some point, I think the DG of this department will come to Parliament and then present his own strategic plan in line with the new objectives that he'll be responsible for. But obviously then, even in the finances of the Department of Defense, there is a reference to about $20 million this year just for the office, the establishment of that. But that is not the total budget, as it were. Once the plan is drawn up, and I think there will be a proper costing of the activities, and such would therefore be accordingly presented to Parliament. But the DG of the department would carry that responsibility.
Hello. I'm sorry. They say that you have to interrogate the level of pension payouts, health care, and other social benefits to be interrogated so that the realistic provision can be made for this important sector falling under the department. Are you saying that's what the plan will cost? Because this is what the minister is saying in the strike plan now. This is on page 2, members. If you look at the forward of what the minister says in the strike plan itself. This is forward by the Honorable Minister of Defense, the Minister of Defense. It starts with the creation of a new Department of Military Veterans with its own accounting office. Would provide the guarantee that the rights, the acknowledgement, and the material provisions are copies. So it's not just an offshoot. It's a very serious creation given by a lot of historical perspectives and women who fought for freedom in South Africa are given. It is not enough to pay lip service to the men and women who were prepared to sacrifice. They are all. The level of pension payout, health care, and other social benefits. I'm just trying to find out, is that what the plan will contain? So you are saying that the $20 million, it is just to create the department itself, taking care of all these different issues that are going to be put in front of the department. Is that what you're talking about?
I think, Chair, what I was trying to say is, you recall that the Minister of Defence had appointed the task team, and the task team had developed a report, and that report talks to quite a number of policy positions. And I suppose, Chairperson, I must say, I suppose, therefore, that the plan to be developed should therefore speak to those policy positions so that it addresses the expressions of the minister contained here.
You know why you are still part of this DJ? I know the... We are having a budget vote on the 4th of May. So part of our view has to be expressed to what is in the strat plan. That's how the process works in Parliament. So if we don't have the facts, but we are going to call we are going to try to organize an early session that is going to try to speak to this matter. Because if we don't have concrete facts, it's not going to help in how we view the budget review. I must indicate to people who were skeptical about why we had a workshop with Treasury. Parliament has changed its modus operandi. We've got a law that allows Parliament in itself to have a say over the budget. In the later, around about September, we are going to have a stronger say over how Parliament's budget is, even departmental, what is happening within the budget. So when we engage in Treasury, we are quite aware that we have a responsibility where Treasury will begin to tell us exactly in terms of finances how the expenditure trends are going to go. So that later after the budget vote, you are going to, after the FIFA World Cup and everything, the money bill will fall into place. And when the money bill falls into place, part of our responsibility as a portfolio committee would have been to look at the money itself and see how those expenditure trends are taking place. So we are going to have a lot of influence of members to tussle about. So if they don't understand what you are talking about, they might just cripple your budget and create a problem for you. Because they have influence by law to be able to influence the budget. So it means that sometimes when the budget committee also gets created, that process, I've just gone to the chair of chairs to write it out for the department so that the people could understand that there is a process that is going to fall in place later this year where the portfolio committee would have that challenge of being able to be confronted and be presented with the budget and influence the budget in how it's being expenditure trends are taking place. That's why you find us interacting with Treasury at this particular moment. Some of the lessons that are going to take place. So, why I'm raising that is because I'm saying, even here, if we don't take care of what is going to confront or the development around the military veterans and the issues that are raised, we'll end up talking parallel to what the department would want to achieve within the strat plan itself. So we need to familiarize ourselves. That's why I'm going on slowly with the process here, because your influence in Parliament is going to be based on how much you understand the issues the department is confronted with. So there should be a positive part to whatever we're trying to do, to say, how do we help the department? And the department must be more closer to us so that we can all march together into assisting the department in some of the areas of challenge. So it's not just an interrogation session. I know that some of our own members wouldn't really, like myself, I don't know much about this maritime and all those things and the time and the hours. It's important that we get more clarity so that when we go into the budget process and go beyond the budget process, we are able to influence and bring some understanding closer to what we think should be the terms and ways of how the department should spend its money itself. So it's not just a mere exercise of trying to interrogate you, but it's an exercise of where we should benefit as members of Parliament, so that when the occasions arise for us to engage into the into the debate, we are fairly informed about what is confronting us. And that is why I'm taking it this room. So that I also want people to internalize the strat plan itself, because they might talk to you and they talk into different languages, and only to find out there's so much information that they've provided as a department for the members of Parliament to appreciate that there is quite a lot of work and positive things that are coming out of it, the work that they're presenting. That's the line I'm taking towards. As I'm saying, later in the year, this type of challenge is going to arise when the money bill kicks in and members of Parliament will have to influence the direction that is going to be taken by the department.
Thank you.
Chairperson, as you correctly said, that some of us must understand what's happening here. With regard to the military veterans, we really do not understand. For me, I do not understand. Because there is a shortcoming, and it's coming from the department, not giving us at least the basic, as the Admiral has said, V-lock, basic level of capability, F-lock, full level, and N-level is no. But I think we, with regard to military veterans, we are N-lock in terms of information. We get no information. Let me explain, Chair.
Yes, sir.
You know, my understanding is that the military veterans, and this is what I've seen on Sky News, they say the British ministry is to facilitate the soldier or whoever from active soldier to civilian life. So, and I then understand maybe this is what our military veterans will be about. Because, and I could understand when I see a chap who was in the World War in Egypt, Mr. Van Lansberg, he's still marching like this and he's still saluting. So he didn't change from active service, he's still, the war is still with him. And I just want to say that, Chairperson, if that is the sort of aim, then we must get the information, and on top of it, we must have the definition at least. So, the definition and what is the main objective, we must understand those two basic things. Then we will be at basic level, at least. Thank you.
So, what is going to happen? The acting Secretary of Defense, who used to be here, has now moved on. He's taken a full time. He's now the DG of the military veteran under the deputy minister. They were supposed to come to Parliament and give us a full workout of how that division is going to operate. So he is not here today. They are putting up on us, but in the program, we are putting up a date for them to come and see the full information of all the work that has been done. That's why he is so limited here to it. Because he wanted the full presentation to be coming down by the deputy minister and his new DG, so that you can all experience PAR. Well, I feel at this particular moment, all of us, we are waiting for that information from the deputy minister. Since the president announced this, that the defense is now defense and military. But the minister has asked us at that stage that she's going to give the responsibility over to the deputy minister, and then the deputy minister is going to go and work out the details. There is a legislation which defines what is a military veteran. I just have to ask Mandy to give you some of the documentation so that you could have a sense of it. By the time we go to that discussion, we'll have that legislation and we'll have the full information coming from the deputy minister and his new DG. Come forward and explain to us what is happen. So that's why I'm saying to them that whatever the minister has said now, they must know that this is where our starting point is going to be, that this is going to be the expectation. Why I'm saying that is because I know that we are closing on Friday, we are going to go to constituencies, and at least I know people who are veterans out there are going to be talking to you. This is a limited information that you'll be having in front of you of what the ministry has said at this particular moment. But the full information will come back by the time we come back. And especially making sure that the deputy minister comes and do a full presentation of how far that interim commission has gone and what is coming out of that interim commission. We must separate the two. There is an interim commission that is dealing with remuneration, the one that we had in Nafin. Now the one that are waiting for a full report for that the deputy minister is going to bring the report to us. Okay. So you will definitely have an opportunity to go and get that. That's it all.
Chairman, it seems to me like I'm a brother here in the field. You know, I think Chairman said you remember always I'm talking about the home of them. But if I'm not mistaken, I saw in their book
our soldiers, if I'm not mistaken, can be 70,000 But we're talking about military veterans, always. How many of them? You know, why we're talking about who don't even know them? And those military veterans, they're gaining something in the budget. If they're gaining, why we don't even know how many of them? And, you know, this thing, I was asking the minister and the city minister and so on and so on and so on. But some of us, as my colleagues say, you know, we don't know about these things, but I think that's what we must know. Because I am scared, because many people are just saying, we are soldiers. And some people are just saying, no, we are soldiers. So I think if they can show us, then we can look there. This one is the right one, but this one is not the right one. I'm not sure they get benefit or they are not get benefit. They just put it in the department or what. I think also to help us. We don't know. Maybe you can not understand what I'm talking about.
No, I understand very well.
Because I don't understand. I got.
The question I'm asking that dollar is basic. How many people is the state paying for who are caught in military veterans? That's a question I'm saying could be answered when the deputy minister comes here to talk. What he did is that who are the services? Where is that constituent? Is it what you see on TV when people see messenger with big jeans or what is going on? That question is the answer was answered when the deputy minister comes around. Is it that okay? David, you want to say something? Honorable David?
Thank you, Chair. Just on a lighter note, you will recall that the Deputy Minister was scheduled to brief this Committee on Military Veterans, but then, alas, disappeared to where? Uganda. Now,
David, just don't when you don't have an opportunity of planning to fight with us over that.
Can I ask? Oh, sorry.
Okay, David.
Chair, can I ask a second batch of questions? But before that, could I ask a follow-up question?
Yeah.
Three follow-up questions.
No, you were just going to find the meeting. So we
are finished on that one.
I don't want to make sure that everything
gets done. No, we'll get your time. Thank you, Chairperson. The next question will be answered by Acting Chief of Joint Operations, Major General Tricky.
Honorable Chair, I want just to clarify the question so that I answer it in total.
We just want to learn more about issues that are related to peacekeeping. If you also say it's about foreign affairs, Acting Secretary of Defense is in pursuit of defense diplomacy strategy to rekindle territorial integrity. The department's role as an honest broker has been profiled.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, speak to that issue.
Okay.
Give us more facts.
Okay.
We don't know what you're talking about.
All right. Honorable Chair, honorable members, joint operation is the arm and the fist of the government. And we are taking part in peace support operations in the form of ordered commitment, in which we are instructed to take part in peace support operations. We internals in defense of the sovereignty, the first line of defense is our deployment in our borders. That one is a very serious exercise as a first line. If the threat LNSC shows that there is a threat that is building up, the combat readiness aligned with services and divisions, we will write a force employment requirement to address that. Joint operations is there to conduct operations in and out as required by the state. And also, on collateral issues, presently, we were deployed in internal in assisting in the construction of bridges, utilizing the the expertise in the service, especially in the Army, in the form of our engineers. So we are broadly utilized in that context. Thank you, sir.
If I can add to chair and members, maybe because of my experience, previous experience, we also help to deploy forces external. As honorable members know that we are deployed in Burundi, Sudan, the DRC, and also assisting in the CAR, training their forces. We are utilized to actually work together with foreign affairs to make sure that the projections of the government, the diplomatic effort, is actually enhanced by our deployment. We achieve or we help achieve those objectives which are actually in line with our international agreement. So that is why we think it is always important for all of us, especially in the military, the Joint Operations Division has to cooperate with foreign affairs, because we can't just go out without diplomats reporting to the government that this is the time for military to be deployed. So there is that cooperation at a higher level, because it is necessary. And as I have indicated, in line with our international agreement, we are deployed by the Commander-in-Chief. As you know, you must inform Parliament, and if you agree also, then you will see soldiers outside the borders of South Africa to protect that good image of the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe from what Mr. Matani is saying, can he at least clarify, members of Parliament, the relationship between the SADC force and this question of joint operation, how to raise it?
Additionally to that, I mean, because you are seeming to be praising yourself about having success stories, how has that been operating? You've been getting some acceptability. What has been going on there? And how has been that relationship with the UN? Has it strengthened our image of them in our state?
Thank you, Sir Person. As far as we're concerned, we have achieved the objectives that were set out for country to achieve in terms of this external deployment. As we speak today, we have an elected government in Burundi, and that is through our efforts. If members remember well, when we deployed in that country, we were the first members to go into Burundi. Although we were meant to go there with Nigerians and Ghanaians, but that was not possible. They withdrew, they decided not to go at the very last moment. And South Africa was there alone, and followed by Mozambique and Ethiopia. So we cooperated with those members to achieve peace in that country. And other members like Ethiopians actually withdrew and were left there all by ourselves to achieve the final objective of an elected government in Burundi. And we were deployed as South Africa first, and then followed by UN AU mandate, and then at the very last moment the United Nations also got involved. And members know that we are now deployed in the DRC as part of MONUC, as part of the United Nations force that is monitoring the peace development in that country. So we are achieving what actually are objectives that we meant to achieve. There is peace in that country. There are limited operations in the east because of the rebels that came from Uganda and also Rwanda. But broadly, there is peace in that country because of the sacrifices of our soldiers and diplomats who are involved in the DRC. So we are, yes, achieving the objectives that are set to be achieved. I'm forgetting the first question now. You raised another one. The relationship with SADC. Yes, as member, South Africa is a member of SADC. And therefore, we cooperate with other members in building the brigade that was launched in Zambia 2007. And we continue to be involved in its activities and the development. I think members will remember that we had a huge exercise which was actually conducted in South Africa. We called it Exercise Confino. It was a huge success. We wanted to test the pledges that were given by different countries so that when they are, when we have the responsibility to do something together, then we are able to deploy forces. As far as we are concerned, and we hosted that exercise here in the Wasa, it was a huge success by all standards. And we'll continue to be engaged in the development of this SADC brigade. So at all times, we are working together. We have a training center in Harare, and we send our soldiers there. We send our lecturers there, and we cooperate through that structure as well. Thank you.
Is there anything we can go to the next question?
Thank you, sir. The next question will be dealt with by a Brigadier General, Gilbert.
Honorable Chair, the question was asked, what is the capacity of the Department of Defense with specific reference to each human resource element? Chair, the current approved post structure of the Department of Defense for each full-time component provides for a structure of 87,500 posts. 87,500, that's production posts. That if you fully staff with the full-time component. However, that we have do not have the budget to fully staff up to that level of 87,500. Budgeted for the strategic business plan for the 2010-11 financial year is 78,100. So we see that there is a shortfall in terms of plus minus 9,500 between what we have money for to achieve 100% staffing situation. However, you will never achieve the 100% staffing situation because there's always a turnover of people. The current number of people in the full-time component that we have as at the 1st of March is 76,750 members, which includes a current MSD strength of 8,300. So we see there's a slight shortfall in terms of the numbers that we currently have on our books, 76,500 to the budget amount of 78,100. That shortfall will be bridged in the financial year as we grow the MSDS intake to about 11,000 members in the system. As Chairperson, we must understand this human element also against the background that the attrition figure of the full-time component every year differs, but is in the region of 3,000 members coming in and leaving the organization. For instance, the MSDS system, which is the main feeder system for both the regulars and reserves currently, as the members come in, January intake is 3,500. For interest sake, Chair, I also wanted to mention the following figure to you. Since the implementation of the Military Skills Development System in January 2003 in the Department of Defense, just under 29,000 members were appointed through the Military Skills Development System.
29,000?
29,000. Of those 29,000 that was appointed, all of them were trained, Chair. 13,500 moved on to the regular system since 2003 in feeding the regular system. 8,000 is still today in the MSDS system. So we will see that the feeding to our reserve system, the majority of our intakes move into the regular system or the full-time system and not feeding so much the reserve system. And that's where our challenge is. So if we turn to our second component, Chair, which is our reserve system, then we see that the current strength in the reserve system is 28,500 on our books, while we want to grow our reserve system further with a system or a shorter system like the MSDS system that's currently under investigation. So that, in a nutshell, at the macro level, honorable members and chair, is the situation of the human element to support the Defence Force in terms of its approved post structure and in terms of the current budgeted strength, as well as the number of people that we have on strength.
If I can just ask you one question, in terms of skilling on those young people, how does your skilling go around? What type of skills do you give to leave them with?
Chairperson, the main aim of the military skills development system is first to provide it as a feeder system for both the reserves and the regulars. So when members come in, they are trained first of all in military basic training. Then they moved on to the different corps or the musterings of the different services where they get functional training. That functional training varies from training people as, for instance, a chef, as an example, or as an infantryman. And the main purpose of this is to train for the military regular in the first place, and then also for the reserve system. In the process, you get collateral skills when you train people. If you train people in a technical field, there is a collateral that you give, which you find in the private sector. And then as people move toward the end, or towards the end of their term, there is some bridging training that we liaise with outside institutions to find job opportunities for those and to ensure a smooth transition from military into civilian life. However, as you can see the figures, Chairperson, the majority of them moved over to the regulars, where they then further trained in the different functional directions of the military, as required by the different corps and by the different musterings of the South African National Defence Force.
Any questions?
I think the next question was to be on AU. The UN. I think we have answered that question. And the other question which was raised was on the South African Army. I think General Trott was able to respond to that.
Honorable Chair, with regard to the strategic packages, I cannot say much, but what is important is the Air Force received their packages, the Navy received their packages as well, and for sure, they also are not fully capacitated with what they ask for as such. But from our side, I think the Army is in dire need for new prime mission equipment and that type of, prime mission equipment in broad. What is important about the prime mission equipment that we have at this stage, we can still make do with what we have at this stage. We can still achieve our objectives. But there is also certain negative spin-offs by maintaining this older equipment for longer periods, because you are going to pay much more maintenance funds, spend much more maintenance funds on maintaining this equipment compared to if you have new equipment into the system. So, the long and the short is, I think it is important that we emphasize the land work as you are capable.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item is on the question of development and state. I think the Defence Force is actually contributing quite a lot in line with our military objectives to support the people. I think we are doing quite a lot. Tibet has indicated that we recruit youngsters in this system of MSDS. We train youngsters to become doctors. We train youngsters to be engineers, combat officers, pilots. We are involved in that program. We also deploy, General Chiki alluded to this one, deploy our engineers to build bridges in the rural areas as asked by government. and that is our contribution, because things are difficult, very difficult in those areas. But we do that in line with our cooperation agreements with other departments. We have been involved in firefighting. We have been involved in helping the communities when required to get water that is so necessary. And as far as that one is concerned, because it may be a core business of another department, we cannot go it alone. We go because there is an agreement with a specific department, like public works in the case of bridges. So the defense force is always ready to assist because we have a strategy to deal with that. There may be police. Yes, sir.
You know, you are talking about rural areas. In my mind, you are somewhere. I just want to understand about rural areas. As a rural man, I want to understand. I'm not sure what to do with the German not what in the rural areas. Maybe you can do
it.
And maybe I'm not a material.
Okay,
I'm protecting you, go ahead.
Sir, I was referring to a few examples where we actually use our abilities to help the rural areas. We were approached, for instance, by Public Works to say there are difficulties in the Eastern Cape where there are no bridges. People have problems in crossing rivers. They came to us, and we have a memorandum of understanding between the two departments to fix those bridges. And I think members have seen it maybe on the television screen when the Minister of Public Works was actually a functionary in this handing over processes of the bridges. And we have helped at such field here in the Western Cape. When there was no water, we were approached by this Department of Cooperative Governance to help there. And we were saying we do that when we are approached by other departments, because it may be a core business of another department, but we do so in line with our military objective, also the support to the people. And we are ready to do that when we cooperate with others, including SAPS.
Let's take a new round of questions. Is there a question? I thought that was another question.
Your question is a mandate-driven question.
Let's get
into
that question.
You know, Jefferson, it's very important when they say some other rural place. Because I'm saying rural area.
Yes.
That's why I'm a little confused, because I'm saying rural area, where my wife and my house are. But I think if they say some other rural, not general rural area, because these things don't even know what they are talking about. Because in our rural area, there's no these things. We are suffering. But say, some other rural area, not general. Because when you say people who stay in town, when you say rural area, they think all over South Africa. But some other places where. So that's the problem. You find when it's raining, our children are going to school, river is full.
And they are saying they are quite willing and they are helping with different programs. But it depends who approaches.
We can't tell them
what to do. Somebody talk to the defense minister, the defense minister comes to the judiciary council, and then at the end of the day somebody must pay for the amount. They are 5% of the legal. You can switch off your TV.
Thanks, Jefferson. I think just to address the issue of mandate-driven, I think there's basically two concepts here. One is the mandate-driven, I think, which has been referred to. But on the other hand, there is another concept that talks to cost-driven. As you would know, Chairperson, that the mandate of the department is derived from the Constitution. That says, we shall defend the country, its people, and its territory. That is the mandate of the Defense Department. And in order to execute that particular mandate, the department therefore prepares defense capabilities in order to respond to that particular indictment. But obviously, you therefore find that there are limitations of funds or limitation of funding, which therefore, most often than not, leads to situations where it is cost that drives the activities of Defense Department as opposed to it being driven by the mandate. All that the department is saying is that we would want to move to a scenario or dispensation where the mandate is the one that drives the funding of Defense Department, as opposed to funding determining what Defense Department can actually do. So that here is just the distinction between the two concepts. But as I say, we are striving for, or we're trying to call for a situation where we are mandate driven as opposed to cost driven.
I think this is where the honorable members can try and help us. We have been we have been submitting our estimates of expenditure, but if we are cut down, we have to do our business within that which is given to us. But I think members, looking at the statutes, looking at the white paper on defense and other framework, you can, I think, try and help us to make sure that we deliver on the demands of the Constitution and not just do whatever we can do within this mandate. We are mindful that people want houses, people want to have schools, but if we are really committed to this work, we think that we should appeal to you to talk to other members of parliament, and especially those who work treasury, who interact with treasury, to please help the department cooperate with us so that we can deliver on what is required of the defense force to deliver in terms of the Constitution. And not to say, no, we'll give you this 10 million and do whatever you want to do within that. We have those constraints as alluded to, but this is where we want to go. And we can't go there without your assistance, without your lobbying, without your interactions with other members of parliament who are actually in charge of treasury. We would like to appeal to you to help us reach that state where we are actually driven by the mandate and not to compromise, because there's no more room for us to do what we are required to do. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
We're
taking a new round. Our time seems to short. I hope for sure you'll be quite comfortable enough. You can take all your money.
No, no way. No.
What are we going to do? Starting with Mama Abeda there?
No, maybe
if you, before we take the follow up on this, the mandate,
yeah.
The mandate question,
no.
Because it's part of the first round.
Yeah.
Chairperson, yes, I appreciate the response of the department. But let me honestly say to you, if the department is calling for our assistance, we can give it only when the department has done their part. So, for instance, in this case of the military veteran, I cannot argue for your budget if I don't have a projected budget and a model on which you arrived at this budget. In the absence of those kind of things, there's no way that I can assist you. In fact, what will I will do? I will critique you there and say, you know, this department, as a military department, which must be precise, which must be disciplined, didn't give me something to argue for, to say yes for this new department. And in that sense, I'm saying, let us agree, we will assist only when we get the necessary information.
Thank you.
I just want to make another point, Chairperson, on this cost-driven and mandate-driven. I fully understand what you are saying, sir. I fully understand, but the decline or the decrease in the budget is coming from for a long time now. There's a decrease almost every year. In average, I think it's 4.6 or 5.6 over the last historic period. And whilst the department saying to us, assist us, I think it is the department that must convince us to say we will not take anything less to make sure that our that we are, once again to use your term, we are at F-lock. We cannot take that. But if we are not convinced, we cannot do that job. Okay. Chair, and I'm saying this in response to what we are requiring. That defense update we are not getting from the minister's office.
No, I wouldn't talk to you. The only thing I'm going to say is, I will answer your question. Or the government. Okay, let me just check with you. Then you want to ask something?
Yes, Chair, it's in relation to this point, it's a follow up question. And it does speak to the point that has just been made. I mean, we can assist you, sir, but what the military have never, or what the Department of Defense have never done, is to advance a credible case about why the military needs funding. The basis of that case is the defense update. If the minister introduced a new green paper on defense and the country went through a new defense review, then we could build a credible case for an updated force design and updated funding. So for us to help you, you need to help us, and we need a new defense policy, and we need it now.
I should also follow up on the issues you raised here from the chairperson. There has been a complaint that every year there's a decrease in the defense budget. But at the same time, we expect the army to carry out its mandate as provided for by the Constitution. How on earth do we expect them to do their duty fully if the budget of the defense is decreased every year? They obviously cannot meet the mandate. And I think we are failing as a portfolio committee ourselves, because we should be taking the matter up with the Treasury and assist the Army to say this budget is not enough, it can never be enough. We must remember, Commander Chairperson and friends, that the Army, there are three important things to me in my life. The Army, defense of our country, education and health. There are other important things, but those three to me are absolutely essential. They're important. If we cannot look after the army, who are we? As it is right now, the army is naked. It hasn't got enough funds. And we expect the army to defend us. How can they defend us if their budget is decreased every year? I think it is this portfolio committee, comrade, which is failing to help the army. We shouldn't say we can help. We must help. Every year when we discuss the budget for the defense, we have got to, I'm glad that from now onwards, from September, that we will be having a say in the budget, as you announced earlier from the chairperson. We'll be having a say, and not just leave it to some other people to decide the budget for us. And the defense review paper that the Honorable
minerals talking about. We have got to operate at the moment on what is there, the white paper which has not been changed yet. We have got to be using that. And the review, the defense review paper, the paper, we have got to operate on them until such time that they are changed. In fact, I want to go as far, so far as to say, even the white paper, it's been there for some time. It's about time that it is changed. It's about time that it is reviewed. And I think in future, when we review it, we must have a clause in that white paper which says every 5 years there must be a review of the white paper. It must be there, in black and white, so that things can be improved. I just want to stop there for the time.
Okay. Now I'll give you an opportunity. I just want this member to clarify themselves. You see, because at the end of the day, you see, now they're beginning to move towards areas where they have to play a particular role. So give them an opportunity to express themselves. But as we're saying that nobody is in dispute with what the deputy minister has presented us. Policy is not something that is stagnant. It can't be stagnant only around the white paper. It's been going on very well. And if you read the strategy, the strat plan, it does show a lot of areas of improvement. And we should never start to smile. You see, we should always also try to find an element of being honest ourselves. The fact is, you see, in the past 14 to 15 years, we have not done much as a country to back up the agenda. We haven't done much. I'll take you to, I just want to show you one thing that I know that cripples the SNDF, which they are not telling you now. If you go to page 31, which gives you the expenditure trend of the SNDF, it is in which particular form, in the third place. It gives you departmental receipts. It says the unpredictable nature of reinvestment for support operations prevent accurate projections in departmental receipts. You see? And this is what a creation of cabinet. Not an improved, but it created that type of an operation. But as the generals are saying, it becomes their obligation to fulfill what is in front of them. But the challenge is that it's not them who make that decision. It's us who are politicians making that decision. That's why Tatum Langen says we need to engage in this type of areas ourselves now as parliament and help guide the defense and see which areas have to be improved. You see, if you look up at that page again, look at the A400, you could see that the A400, while it was in dire need, they considered for us to give it up on that particular one. It has improved their income in a little bit. But we need to do more. In balancing out, in helping the SNDF itself. As I'm going to deal with issues that are related to water and everything, you see, I know that the money in a major way is with the police at this particular moment. It's not with them. They would have to scratch out of their own account to meet the needs of the borderline. They are not saying it, but we know that. And it becomes our responsibility that we work with the SAPS to bring back, to give some money to the SAPS, because it's in the interest of the country. It can't just remain like that we say we are deploying the soldiers there and the next thing they're not getting anything. They don't want to speak here as if they are scrambling and there's tension about issues of money. But it's upon us. We know for a matter of fact, when we deal with the issues of public works, it has been said in SCOPA that the money that is supposed to be spent by them is there with public works. And at the end of the day, the facilities that they have are so much deteriorated. You see. Because public works is not doing that in a consistent manner while they are putting money with them. So it's upon our own to make sure that we then help them to get that public works, to bring back that responsibility back to the SNDF, so that the SNDF could be able to look after its own facilities and begin improving its own capacity, so that
They don't say to go and improve military one, it takes them 3 to 4 years. We've been calling on improvement of the military intelligence headquarters. He's been standing there on the verge of falling and said to the public, why don't you build for military intelligence? They have a place of its own. It's not been happening. So this is where Dr. Mlangeni is. There are certain obligations and certain things that we have to take upon ourselves here as members of parliament and identify them, that here we're going to go ourselves to public work and say to public work, take that responsibility and give it back to the FNDR. Because it will help them to have their money and they to manage themselves, their own facilities, rather than having their facilities to have been moved away from them in a manner that it's happening. So these are the challenges. We must look at that expenditure trend. We must look at that infrastructure spending. And we must look at that departmental spending. That's where you find some of the problems and challenges that they are getting confronted with. And we need to be able to apply our mind in all the things. That's why I was trying to contribute to say, let's listen to the department so that the department can also, they are saying in a strong word, which I appreciate, that department put as much information as you can in front of us so that we can come to your rescue and work with you. That's the message I've always been trying to say over to the department, that if you don't work with the portfolio committee in the present environment, you are going to face the same type of problems that you've been faced with. You come and give report to parliament, you go away, we'll see you next year. This is what the department, the portfolio committee has been doing. Give it to the parliamentary committee, they listen to them, they sign off, they go to the budget vote, they debate and debate and forget about them. Next year they call again. We're not even reviewing what type of questions were posed and what work has been done and what follow-up has been made. That's where the portfolio committee has been always been weak. It doesn't make follow-up and monitor some of the decisions that have been taken. But it's upon us as members of this portfolio committee to bring a change in this particular approach and assist the department itself in achieving some of the goals. I, as I've always said, I appreciate the position within the portfolio committee because it also raised critical issues that are going to help me. But also what I'm saying that at the end of the day, with opposition also there comes the responsibility. One is how we keep confidentiality, because the problem is not keeping confidentiality, weaken the committee. Two, what are the lines that we are drawing in where we can help the department itself? We need to come to that type of an attitude ourselves. If there's not enough information, how do we make sure that we get that information but it doesn't link into this paper, which cripples the department and makes the department fairly weak, and it makes it difficult for them to tell us actually everything that they're doing. And I've said it's not a question resolved, going to be resolved here, but I know it was resolved before that. Where there is sensitive information, let's keep it to ourselves. Because it's really upon themselves when they deal with different stakeholders that they don't feel that they have been compromised. And that's the challenge we are faced with. But as you move forward, as you get this information, as you read this documentation, the bottom line is we need to find a way of where are we going to help the department. Where it is weak, we should be able to come to the rescue and assist. So that by the time we arrive to 2067 and we are dealing with the money being issues, there's a total of, when it's in total operation, the relationship should have been more strengthened between ourselves and the department than where it is at this particular moment. I don't say this department is doing everything good. I don't say so. But I'm just saying that it becomes both of us, it becomes the responsibility of how we cooperate with each other to make sure that things get progressed. It's us politicians. We change every year. Find a defense committee chair today, tomorrow you get another defense chair committee. And it affects the department. Find a nice minister, next year there's no minister again. They have to run through and go. And it becomes a difficulty that they have been burdened with. You can't say to me from the change from Tavo, I mean, President, current then President Zuma, in that period, there wouldn't have been problems within the department. Some of the problems that we're inheriting here are some of the challenges that we've created ourselves. But let's take those issues and let's take those challenges as men and women enough to be able to go ahead in the responsibility that's confronting us here. That's all I wanted to say. Let's go on with our work, but let's find that balance. Let's be critical and let's also be
been negative and positive, so that we don't demoralize this management. We must never want to demoralize this management. Management must never also feel demoralized when you ask a critical question, because they need to feel that you want to come nearer to them to be able to understand what is going on, so that you could be able to help them. Well, really, that's why I still say that I really appreciate what the Mr. Matanzim has done to bring the full component of the engineers here. Tomorrow will be the first one to say, to put that question, how much did it cost for all of them? Where did they sleep and what happened? That's what we're going to be tomorrow morning. And they end up not coming. Then you blame them. I'm just saying that's what we do as politicians. Long list of questions. How many of you were here and what were you doing? We have then forgotten the session that we were engaged in to try to get information. And then the minister says, cut. And then they cut. The majority of them don't come again. And this is another problem of lack of information. So we must find the balance amongst ourselves in how we handle these issues. Because the department is showing its own willingness to come and give information. But that willingness must also be shown from our website. I want to go ahead, Mr. Smiley. So that we take the
we should not be shy to say we want the strongest army in Africa. Our South African army must be the strongest. We shouldn't be shy about that. But we can only do that if you give them the, I'm sure some of your equipment is aging, isn't it? We need new equipment. We've got to give them money. Parliament must be told. The Treasury must be told. They must provide that money.
What the Commander-in-Chief said in Bloemfontein, that there is democracy in South Africa, but the role of the soldiers is to defend that democracy. So we need to find that balance. We're practicing democratic practices, but also the question is, how do we defend democracy itself? Because we might continually say we are a democratic state, but the withering away of the defense might have a cost for us tomorrow, where we can't defend it at all. And when we can't defend it at all, it means the South African society will be gone. That's the view he expressed quite often as a Commander-in-Chief, Jacob Kekeke, so much to say, you must defend democracy. And the role of soldiers is to defend, I've heard them talk about mandate, driven, is to defend this democracy. And that's why I'm saying that let's get nearer to each other and let's work together. Can I start with my mama back? I'll give all of you.
You've got all the time. You know we are going to be here for 5 years.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question is on departmental priorities, repair and maintenance.
Which is on this? Which one are you?
It's
you're using this one.
Yeah, I'm using this.
Yeah.
The repair and maintenance is the main challenge in the department.
I'm using this one, number.
Where is it now? I've
marked
it.
Oh, you saw it somewhere.
Yeah, it's on fire. Page 23.
In the main place.
So one of the department is facing the repair and maintenance. It is a main challenge. But partly, the chairperson, as you covered me when you speak about some of the responsibility of the mayor of the building, it's public works. But since there is this significant backlog, I want, because it's got an impact on the operational readiness and the ability to prepare, and also on discipline of the soldiers and the morale of the soldiers. I want to check with the department, when they were doing this strategic plan and budget, did they cover or what kind of funding is necessary for them to speedily eliminate this deadlock?
Maybe?
No, no, I'm not. The second question is on the Auditor General. It's in the book, the auditor general. There was a concern on the spending.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. So the page 415. There is a lack of effective and efficient transparency in the internal control system. So my question is, what is being done by the department to address this, especially the poor oversight and management on handling their spending? Because last week, the National Treasury representative has indicated to us that the department has spent lots of money on consultants and contractors. So how are they going to improve this expenditure trend in this new financial MTF? That's the only 2%.
Chairperson, I have one question. But before I do the question, let me just quickly say that I do appreciate your input, your last input, and I fully understand it. I think your leadership will come in where you bring us as a committee together and say how can we assist. I'm looking forward to that meeting. Yes. Chairperson, and then also based on the my job as a public rep, I must do oversight, and I must interact with the legislation, and I must speak out for the public. So when I raise issues here, I'm doing three of those things, sometimes simultaneously. And my question was now, and it's coming from my constituents, this one. It's about training. And there's no dishonesty when I ask this question. Even the previous questions, there was no dishonesty. It was honest and questions that is actually raised in the public. My question is, can the department, all the sort of different the Navy and the Army and the Air, can they express themselves the level of training by saying we are very happy with the training in the Navy or in the Air Force or whatever, and saying to this committee, I'm happy with regard to the input, training input, and I'm also happy with the output, the product in the end, whilst you have given the training. So not just to say, yes, I'm happy, but just explain, especially to those two things, input and the output.
That's
the story.
I just wanted you to take note of that tutorial because you like fighting with me over oral questions. I want you to go to page 25. Now I'm just making sure my numbers are on board. All of you have to understand that issue. That tutorial, look at page 25. If you look at the DOD alignment, MTSF priority.
I want you to always take note of the question that you want to talk to about rural development. They are saying strategic priority number 3. Do you have it there, Tatutor?
Yes.
Then I think comprehensive rural land development strategy linked to land and agrarian reform and food security. Now they're also saying that one of the things that we must judge them on finalization of pending land claims and land restitution. Where you come from, those type of challenges are there. So I want you to take note of the priority that the department has set itself in all the other things that you are looking at. That as you continue and you look at that question, that this is one of the things, aggressive implementation of land reform policies. That challenge, I do hope that the minister, when she has put it here, she must know that you are very loyal to that question. Just saying the take note of this is that underlies that you go here. David?
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to. This is a new round, is that correct?
No,
okay. I'd like to ask 3 new questions and then 2 brief follow ups. The first question, Secretary of Defense, concerns the defense update which we've touched on. Now, if you look at page 419 of the estimates of expenditure, the figure is not clear, but it seems to suggest that over 2 financial years, we could have spent a significant proportion of up to 11 million rand on the defense update and the defense strategy. Now, I'm less interested in the figure than the fact that if you look at the previous strategic business plan, provision was made for the defense update, and if I remember correctly, it was going to be submitted in August 2009. What concerns me in the strategic defense plan for 2010, the defense update seems to have disappeared. No provision, it seems to me, is made for a defense update in the strategic business plan. And so the question is, if I could just come back, the defense update seems to be replaced by a defense strategy. The defense strategy will apparently be due or submitted in October or November this year.
Now,
in the strategic business plan.
I'm looking for it in a strategic business plan. I'll find it. You know what? I want also to guide you with. I want you to do the pick up one. Yours is 53.
Yes.
I just wanted you also to, as you're outlining some of the things that they're raising, I see the ministry has given some priority. That is on page 23.
Correct.
And I just wanted you to also see what you think about those priorities.
Yeah.
I accept the fact that I don't see myself as a defense uptake in those particular priorities.
The defense update seems to have disappeared from the strategic business plan. It seems to have been replaced by something called a defense strategy, which, as you say, is contained on both page 24 and 53 of the document. And the short answer to the short question is, when will the defense update see the light of day? That's the first question. And is the defense strategy a defense update by another name? We need some clarity because this is absolutely fundamental. It is literally the case for improving the funding levels of the defense force. If we do not have these documents and we do not have clarity about this, I think that we're in deep trouble. That's my first question. Let me move from the defense update to the defense budget. The very essence of the Defense Force's argument, Chair.
You know what I wanted to check with you, if you could be happier. Can we put this question in writing to the minister? You know I want to move it away here, because you've been asking this question from the soldiers all the time. I think let's write a formal letter to the minister herself and get more clarity from her.
so that you could be able to understand from the head of the division of the department itself that what does he say exactly. So I seem, you seem not to be happier with what the defense minister, deputy minister has said. So if you're not, let's write a letter for my citizenship. What answers can you give us around this particular area? Would you really mind the department?
Chair, I'm unhappy with that solution, but perhaps as a compromise, the department could just explain the difference between the defense update and the defense strategy, if indeed there is a difference.
Let's take that whole question and see if is there anyone who's dealing with this matter inside the department. Amongst you, is there somebody who's writing that document? No, I'm asking, is there someone who's dealing with the present update? Or should we take it that the minister will answer for us? Chief of Operations, the minister will have to take up this question. You want to take that question? Okay. The department, let's allow the minister to take up this question on your behalf. The whole portfolio committee will solicit an answer on that particular question. And you'll get the answer from there. Yeah, you can move.
Thank you. Let me move then on to the budget. The essence of the department's argument is that the department is underfunded. And I would like the department to spell this out in detail. What is the shortfall for the Department of Defense in respect of the department and in respect of each arm of the service? If the department are underfunded, what is the level of underfunding? That's my second question. The third question, Chair, concerns acquisition. I think it's important that this committee be fully informed about the acquisition program of the department. Could the department spell out the acquisition, if you like, milestones or highlights of this year? What, in respect of each main acquisition this year, what is the project name? What type of equipment will we be acquiring? How much will we be spending? And here I have a special interest in Project Viro, Hoofaster, and Vistula. And the reason I'm concerned about this, Chair, because if you look at the, again, at the estimates of expenditure, and I'll find the page on four, on page 415 of the estimates of expenditure, it seems to me that what we've done in this financial year is we've increased the spend on personnel, 415 of the estimates of expenditure. We've increased expenditure on personnel, but the cost or the opportunity cost of that funding has been in acquisition. Now, I want to try to understand the consequence of that. Those are my three questions. My two follow-ups.
Now, one and two. First question about three.
Okay, I'll ask another question.
I'm just saying, the second question, I'm sure that the department might not have an answer now to the costing at this particular moment of giving a detailed answer to that. Can you also answer, then here we leave it with the acting secretary of defense to work on that question. You'll write it down properly for me and leave it over to them and they'll give you the detail of that question. They won't have answers now. I'm that suspicious. I don't want to put them under education when they get to it.
I mean, Chair, at the end of the day, I'm interested in the answer. If this is the most effective way in your view to get the answer, I'm happy to go with
you. Yes, you see, the effective way was that if you, as you we work for everybody to benefit in how that approach takes place. So what we do is we are going to pose the question and ask the Secretary of Defense who is working on the questions and work out the costing and bring that question back to all of us. And I'll give it back to you as immediate as they can, even if they're on holiday. I'll hunt you down, which I have a possibility of doing, and then we'll have the answer. Yeah. I'll talk to the Secretary of Defense and we'll get the answer. But that's right, it's up again, but I'm not sure about the question. The third question I'm leaving for them to answer now. So the two questions is the one that we'll postpone to get the answer from. Okay, fine.
Sure. Follow up question.
Yeah. Just to clarify, I'm never on holiday.
Yeah. No, I know. I told you. I want to tell you how do I know some of you.
Thank you, Chair. On the follow-up, I mean, let me thank the department for their response on the flying hours. Your response did advance our understanding of the air defense program, but I do think it's necessary that we drill down into the detail of the total amount of flying hours allocated to Gripen and Hawk. But we will deal with that in writing. I'm happy with that. But I'd like to ask a follow-up question to the Navy and then to the Army. If I correctly decode what the Admiral said, he said essentially that we maintain one operational frigate and one operational submarine. Or let me rephrase that, one fully operational frigate and one fully operated submarine. And I'd like to understand the constraint on why it is that we are not able to ramp this up and maintain three fully operational frigates and two fully operational submarines. That's my follow-up. In respect of the Army, if I understood the general from Joint Operations correctly, there were two battalions available for Operation Corona deployment in the borderline security function. The question then arises is, if that is so, why then in this financial year are we only going to deploy, is it three or four companies onto the South Africa Zim and South Africa Mozambique border? Again, what are the constraints in causing us not to be able to deploy more soldiers? Chair, those are my follow-up questions. Given the fact that you, what would the right term be, shot down, to use a military metaphor, two of my questions, could I squeeze in a second actual question, which I think is of paramount importance to me, and then I'm done.
Done. Brackets in practical terms. Unless they don't provoke you. Give your last question.
Chair, an issue that is of...
Yes.
Chair, the last question is of great importance to me, and I don't want to sort of expand on this. Safe to say that the NCACC has been much in the news over the previous financial year. And much of what we know and much of what we've read, and let me put this delicately, suggest that there are some administrative weaknesses. Now, if you compare the strategic business plan 2009 to the strategic business plan 2010, what you have is a cut and paste. Strategic business plan page 42, 43, and that's 2009, and 2010, page 54 and 60. You have a cut and paste. Now, 54 and 60. Now, there clearly was a problem in the NCACC, but I see no intervention in the business plan to actually rectify whatever may have been wrong in the NCACC. It seems to me to be a cut and paste, and there's no evidence of any kind of intervention. So my question to the department is, has the department taken any action to rectify or make any changes in respect of the administration of the DCACC, the Directorate of Conventional Arms Control, and the NCACC. Thank you.
Can I give Sadulang, do you have anything? No question. Sadulang, there? You have not been able to understand the general about it. Now, I know you are recruiting, but I'm happy. That goes to Mla.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the response is page 31.
Page
31. The loss of peace. I'm not actually happy or convinced with the answer that is given by the department in terms of loss of peace, especially engineers, because if I remember well, the question was based on procurement that has taken place within the department. So we wanted to know specifically as to where do these engineers go to, because other people, they will get training within the defense and open their companies or their friends open companies on their behalf, and then they go after receiving those skills, they go and run those companies. The question was based on that. Thank you.
David, honorable, if you go to number 5 of the view that was given by the acting Secretary of Defense. You have read this document, so I need to always bring some of these things to your attention. You see, because when you raise the issue of cut and pay, it's number 5, it's on the presentation by the acting Secretary of Defense. One would take the view that was presented yesterday by the minister in the presidency. He said he's going to look at into that matter of cut and pay. Remember yesterday. So it's not solely about the defense itself. It's an issue. He says that it cuts across departments. It has to be attended to if ever it is a problem. But at that moment, his view was like it's not the best reflection of government itself. And I just thought that in reading with that in the back of my mind, from starting with where the acting Secretary of Defense started explaining his story, he says this addition reflects yet another innovative attempt to improve the content of the strategic plan. This strategic plan has been rearranged to ensure that the legislative requirements are complied with. The strategic plan is divided into three chapters, and then he explains that reflect performance tables for each of the DOD. You see what I'm reading there? Another. Yeah, I'm saying is when you look at the submission by the acting deputy, acting defense secretary. Yeah, I'm just saying look at number 6 there. The last line as you go down. Equality. So I'm just saying that it doesn't seem this is a cutting page. There is an acknowledgement, but when you conclude that paragraph of it, the strategy plan further anticipates the migration of the HR component that encapsulates the military veterans of the new department. As such, it is anticipated that a separate detailed strategy plan will be developed in form of the expenditure migration of assets that will characterize them from an aging department. So I'm just saying, there is an honest approach that has been worked out here at an early stage with an admission of what the Secretariat has provided us at an early stage. It's not just about cut and paste, but it's about showing us that this is work in progress that they are doing, and that's how they are doing the strategic plan. And that is what we need to be able to engage ourselves. This is not the final permanent plan, but this is the view the department has. So you are not wrong, because your English is sometimes rough. You call it cut and place, but also they call it rearranging of their view as they progress in their work. That's good English. Yeah. No, no, I know that you want to respond, but I was just trying to get you to be on board about what the Secretariat has admitted from their side, and also what the Ministry have already pinpointed in the procedure that this is not the only challenge that is here. The one part that I think it makes part of this plan a little bit hazier on our part, how it deals with the question of, which is on page 11, about the DOD structure. The DOD structure has not been able to be put up in a manner that it does accommodate the military veterans. It doesn't show the door. It doesn't show the new formation. It's a separate department, but it doesn't appear anywhere. No, you'll explain yourself. I'm just saying, talk to these people, because you want to understand. But it's an area that if it's construction post-establishment of the DOT, where does the military veteran? If you say it's a separate department, where can we find it? That's one part of concern from my side. I really want you to speak to you before we give closure. And that if ever it is not been able to be improved, we need to find a time frame. You see, the other thing that makes us not to. The strategy plan says these are the ministerial priorities in page 23. These are all your priorities that you have outlined. And that's how we need to look at the department, and that's how the minister wants us to judge. Does it come that at some stage you tell us the time frame, how long will these things take? So it's nice to have them outlined here, and they are written under the MTEF period. Now, we need to know exactly, because if we give you the transformation of AFSCO, when will that take place? What period are we talking about? So we do understand what the ministry says, but maybe if you say to us that these details, where will we get them when we come back? Because you can't have the minister, I mean, I'm telling you, it's gone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, to 15 to 25, with no detail. And how do we deal with this type of an approach? And what, when we go to the budget board, we would want to know, and beyond the budget board, this is what you say, this is how we want to charge the minister. This is how we're going to charge the minister. But if there's no time period, it does affect our own understanding. You'll be complaining tomorrow when we ask this question, that what happened to the rejuvenation plan? Where is it? This is what you are saying to us. This is how we want us to start the business. And this is how we want us to be critical of the business. So these are things that are coming up quite clearly. Maybe you should be able to the department overall. So you wouldn't make a priority without your knowledge. Should be able to tell us that how do you want us to charge on this one? Where will we get these time frames? So that you know. If we are misrepresenting yourself, say that to us. As I'm saying that the expenditure trends are going to be coming very out. There are some issues of departmental receipts, issues of infrastructure being spent. These issues are very outstanding. We acknowledge the fact that you have written them up, but how do we resolve them, and how do we judge the resolution of this type of problem? We do have that on table 3, did you see the legislation that is on page 29? I would say that these legislations are ready and they are available. That is on page 29. Have they gone to cabinet? Are they on the road towards parliament?
because you also want to put up a good parliamentary program. And we still in parliament, we also have to do hearings and all those things. This time around, the year is very short because of the FIFA. So for 2 months, we are going to be taken off. For the military veterans affairs, this is one of the major things that we have to tackle. Are these things available and where are they? Before I give maybe the last person, I want to check if there's any other person who's got another question so that we can say that the people have done a lot of work. I'll start with you, Dr. Tola. I'll give you Dr. Mlongo, and I'll give you after that. And then from there on, I'll give the department to answer. And you can.
Thank you very much. You know, I remember last week I was asking this question about what is the latest from Airbus A400 regarding the cancellation of the contract. I remember Shepard was saying, no, you will ask this question on the meeting. Yeah. Yes. Just like a short. That's right.
What is the latest from Airbus A400M regarding the cancellation of the contract?
Yeah, I agree with you, Commissioner Chairperson, that the weakness or my criticism of the department here is that in as far as this macro structure is concerned, it's an outdated, it's an old thing, it's an old structure. You're showing us an old structure of 1958, which did not provide for the military veterans. I don't know what is the purpose of showing us this if you do not include that other structure. If you are saying further reorganization will be pursued in the year ahead, and we are going to include that part of the military veterans, I'll be very happy.
Chair, really a follow-on from your question. I'm looking at page 23 where we look at the Minister of Defence's priorities, and I point to priority 5, which reads alignment of Defence Secretariat with its constitutional and legislative mandate. Now, I expressed a concern some weeks ago that it seems that the Secretariat is being colonised by the military. But it seems that I might in fact be wrong, because it seems that the Defence Secretariat are going to be colonised by the Ministry.
Are you looking for colonizers?
But I do think that we need some clarity. There's clearly a debate in the Ministry about the top structure, the level one structure of the Department of Defence. And we need some clarity about what is envisaged here, because the Defense Secretariat, and we like to forget in the Constitution, is not the Defense Secretariat, it's the Civilian Defense Secretariat, is a constitutionally and independent organization. So we need some clarity on exactly what is being envisaged here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairman. The first question will be answered by Brigadier General Helfer. That is on defense facilities.
Thank you, Chair. The Department is currently busy with a transition assessment of all these facilities. We have in the order of 10 million square meters of buildings. We have already completed the condition assessment for the airport facilities and for the Navy facilities, with, I think, small exclusions which are being completed now, and order for the military hospital. This condition statement will be completed by the end of the financial year, of the next financial year, so the 10-11 financial year. We have currently, based on the preliminary results of this condition assessment, estimate the requirements for complete repair and maintenance of all our facilities to be in the order of 13 billion rand. We have in the next financial, in the next 3 years, approximately 2 billion rand in the strategic plan. Obviously, this is not going to be sufficient to speedily repair and maintain all our facilities. However, we have to take into account that even if we were to get the whole 13 billion rand, it cannot be spent given the capacity of the Department of Public Works and the capacity, own capacity. So we would have to phase it in over a period. We have been getting increasing allocations from National Treasury for this purpose. As you know, we are also increasing and improving our own capacity through the work capacity. And if you look at page 16 of the response we prepared from the questions that were made on the 3 March session, you will see that the progress report on our own capacity. It should also be noted that the Department of Public Works in this financial year stopped the RAMS program and is now replacing it with something more expensive, a refurbishment program, which will be more expensive but will be in more debt.
Thank you, sir. The next one will be answered by Mr. Anderson.
I just wanted to indicate, depending on how fast you answer questions, it could be finished by 5 o'clock. I'm under the impression that some of you would want to rush to the airport. It's really dependent on your answering of questions. It won't keep you longer. I can particularly have not spoken a lot, but I'm supposed to get with you for now. But
really?
Yeah.
I'm ready. I've got a nice presentation here.
Chair, short and sweet. We are focusing on good governance, and included in that, we have what we refer to as Operation Clean Audit, where we are specifically addressing all the audit qualifications, and that also then addresses the second part of the question in terms of lots of money on consultants and contractors. The Operation Clean Audit, for example, making use of a consortium of two companies, and that adds a lot of that increases the funding to consultants, contractors. Is primarily focusing on the work done by civil engineering kind of work, like the upgrade of the Air Force Base Warrenkloof and so forth. That's contract workers. We don't have, the department doesn't have that capability. So we need to make use of consultants and contractors. Then we also need to look in, at it in terms of the new economic reporting format that prescribes specific budget items, and we need to comply with that. So you also find a lot of medical expenditure that is focused on a consultants and contractors, where if we don't have a capability in specific areas, in the outlying areas, we send them to private doctors and so forth, and that's also captured on the consultants and contractors.
Thank you, sir. The next one will be answered by Admiral Tosenberg. That is on training in terms of input versus output.
In terms of the South African Navy, in terms of the input, every year we take in an intake of matriculants from all 9 the provinces, representing all cultural groups in accordance with the demographics of our country, gender as well. they report to SA-Saldana. Presently, there are 511 members under training at SA-Saldana. I would like to tell this committee that the youngsters representing the future of our country reporting to Saldana are fine. There's nothing wrong with it. The intellectual capacity, their motivation, their enthusiasm is not lacking at all. And the future is, in fact, in the youngsters that report to places like SA-Saldana. Secondly, we then provide them with pretty good training, I believe. Why do I say so? I say so because many of the individuals in the Southwest Navy get the opportunity from time to time to study overseas at other navies, whether this is in India, whether this is in America, Germany, England, but we give them that opportunity. Invariably, those people do extremely well and come in the top 25% of the courses overseas, to such an extent that Captain Bravo Mushlana, our first African captain of a frigate, who we gave the opportunity to study in the United States, was requested to remain behind as an instructor at the American Navy Institute for Higher Learning. Now, that surely indicates that there's nothing wrong. Of course, the negative spin on this is that the people in the South African Navy are, we believe, so well trained, and that is why they are headhunted to serve oil companies in Nigeria, Eskom, the Australian Navy, which out of six submarines can only run 1.5 submarines with the assistance of ex-South African submariners, which are highly paid, etc., etc. So we believe that our training meets with the requirements. Presently, we have Germanischer Lloyd, which is our classification society, inspecting our submarines to determine whether they still meet international standards, and indications this morning were that they do, because they've been maintained by South African, trained by the South African Navy. We are absolutely adamant that the young South Africans of this country meet the requirements and standards of the new South African National Navy.
This is
yes, thank you for that, and may I congratulate the Navy on that. But, Chair, I don't know whether that represents now the full complement of SAGF. If that is the case, I will rest my case. I will rest, if that is the situation. If I wanted to say if the Army is concurring with what the Admiral is saying, then that's also fine. Yes. But just you will guide the whole world.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. We wanted to give the Navy a chance to inform the members of the committee what is happening within the Navy. What is happening within the Navy is also happening in the Army, Air Force, and SAM. We train the youngsters, we give them basic training, after that the functional training, and we train them for 2 years. Some are selected for core service systems, and some are joining the reserves. And all of them have opportunities to go to universities, to be given bursaries, and also to be trained on functional lines. We believe in that cross-pollination of training. They go to other countries as well. Those from the Army, SAMs, and also the Air Force. We have exchanges with other countries where they can also train. But our training facilities, Chairperson, are adequate. We deal with this, and then we can identify areas where we believe that this lot can go to India or Nigeria or whatever country that we may decide on. So I don't know if the members would really need each service or division to go through. That's a good example of what we do in terms of this training.
We have later in the year, or later, you are supposed to help us to see some of the practical so we should put our eyes on. We wanted to give it to you so that you could see the program. But what the member was just saying, that if you are concerning to him that it happens across the board, he'll be quite satisfied. He seems to be very quiet. Am I right?
We are concerned. Thank you. So the next one is going to be dealt with by Barney Engelbrecht, and it's going to be very short. Maybe to indicate to members the shortfall as required. We have our estimates, but we don't always get what we budgeted for. But they will give you that, the figure.
For members that were long-standing members of this committee will recall that on every year when we present the budget, we indicate to you or members what we've requested and what we've received. And it's year on year on year we can look at the record that what we request and what we get, there's always a deficit. The issue is then this deficit becomes exponential as time goes on because equipment becomes more expensive and so forth. We went through an exercise just to give some indication. On our operating budget, the estimated, and I say the estimated shortfall is in the region of 3 billion rand. The total shortfall on our budget for 2010-11 is estimated to be in the region of about 7.3 billion. Now that works on based on what the department have requested and what we need in terms to fund our priorities as adequately or set out in the strategic business. So that's the way we've got the plan. The plan informs the budget. And these are the options that were provided to National Treasury and to help for the best. In this specific financial or the 2010 budget, the department were at one point told to withdraw all its policy proposals by the National Treasury, which we under protest did. And then because of this, for the 2010-11 financial year, sir. That was based on the projections and the economic downturn. It was supposed to address everybody. But fortunately, they came back to us and they did provide the department with some of the funds that were required.
They said to withdraw all your policy plans.
That is affirmative.
Thank you for that. Just a follow-up question. The total defense budget, I understand, is roughly 7 billion short. That presumably includes the operating shortfall of 3 billion. The question is, given the fact that you submitted a plan, given the fact that plan was not fully funded or was said it was funded, but there was a 7 billion rand shortfall, what adjustments had to be made to that plan? In other words, what was the cost to the Department of Defense? Now, that's a fairly difficult question. I would understand if you're not able to provide that in detail, but could you give us perhaps some a clue as to what the cost of the shortfall was? Thank you.
Yes, we are interested in that, given answer. Because when you are using the economic downfall, now that the economy is taking a different space, what does
that
say?
Okay. The defense force and the military specific are very creative people. And that has been proven over time. And we do our utmost to expend our budget in the most economic and efficient way possible. That's why I've also earlier referred to the simulated training, for example. That is a cheaper option than actual training, but the one supplements the other. It's properly planned and so forth. To indicate the specific cost, I will not venture at this point in time to add a specific amount to it, but, for example, if we take our infrastructure, it delays the repair and maintenance of our infrastructure, which ultimately becomes a more expensive exercise to bring it back to its
normal standard. Then in terms of what the future holds for us, so we follow the budget process. There's the adjustment process that's now kicking in during August and ending in November. So we follow the budget process of government and we will submit. But the adjustment budget is based on only unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure. So we are now in the process of preparing our planning and budgeting for 2011-12. So we are then awaiting the support from the committee as well as new directions from the National Treasury to the extent that they foresee that at the speed at which the South African economy can pick up, and as well as the government's broader priorities, where does defense fit into that on a bigger scheme of things. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I did premise my question by saying that it's a fairly complex question. I do understand why the department can't answer it in detail, but this does go to the question of the top department presenting a credible case for more funding. Clearly, there was a proposal for funding. There was a shortfall. The department must be in a position. I understand why you're not in a position to do it now, but we need to get into a position in the future to explain what the cost of that funding shortfall was in terms of capability and what the consequences of that are for the department in fulfilling its mandate. And I'd like to you, Chair, to ask that at some point, particularly before the budget, this committee gets clarity on that. Thank you.
Now, as I said, that it does not going to be just about clarity. We are going to enter into a political debate amongst ourselves in the portfolio committee. If the ministry is available, we are going to take that on with it and have a political exchange. I understand the nitty-gritty of what we confront that with. You see, what I would want us to do is not because we want to determine or dictate to what we say inside the House during the budget vote, but I would prefer us to have some commonalities of emphasis. We raise the criticism, but we say to ourselves, to improve that budget, what is it that we're expecting to happen? As I'm asking, if the priorities outside of the ministry, is it what it is? Is it, I mean, if we come to a conclusion and say to ourselves that if the bottom line of our own assistance is about helping to improve asset management, how do we do that? You see? So, what I'm saying is, as a chair here, is I'll call on different parties that we workshop amongst ourselves before the final stage of our presentation. We are going to go on the 4th, and then maybe before the 4th, let's have a session amongst ourselves, which is more political, you see, of what is the common understanding of the challenges that confront the defense itself, and what can we do as a collective to assist the department, so that when you go to the budget vote, we don't go with a lot of negativity, but we go with like saying to ourselves that this is what we would be calling for in different ways. As I'm saying, it will be out of persuasion by the chairperson with the different opposition parties to say that can we have some common approach and common emphasis, but raise your criticism and raise your views, but let's find a way of beginning to sit in the SAGM. We will come to a rescue when this and this areas are getting to be proved. If we can get the minister to come to the table, we will sit down and talk, maybe in this room, talk to a frank and open, and see where we can meet each other and ask him. You see, for some of these points, issues that we are raising here are in need of the minister coming to us and talking to us as a collective, you see, and agreeing on the way forward. If we can achieve that, that will take us forward, you see. That's what I'll put to as a political engagement amongst all of us as members of the portfolio committee. But this is not available, we still proceed ourselves as a collective. So that when we deal with the discussions on that particular day and the debate on that day, we don't leave the soldiers demoralized in maybe us starting to do point scoring on the budget vote and nothing else coming out of it. Whatever hot air would have blown to each other on that particular day.
but we'll go into that. As I'm also saying, it all depends on the department contribution itself. That how much are you contributing to assist to get answer in the issues that you are raising. And that's what my approach is going to be before the budget vote. Tata, go ahead.
Thank you. The next question, which is answered by Mr. Peter, but before he does that, I would like to indicate to the members that we may be dealing with sensitive information, and if you can allow him broadly to indicate what we're doing with regard to acquisition, but some of the information really would like to give you in camera. Or when there are no tenants, but you can broadly deal with the question.
DMG?
Well, yeah, no. Don't let people know about DMG, but I'd like to go to people. So just handle it in a very sensitive
way, sir. Don't divulge everything. I know you can, sir. Thank you very much, and it's important that I could take it for the thing to say. I just preparation, which is short.
I also wanted, would you also give me the question on the paper?
Yes, I can do that.
If you can just take also that question so that you can finish it. You have a presentation again?
A very short one.
Okay.
While they are setting up, maybe you can deal with the other question. The Navy operational status, I think the Admiral has dealt with this, unless there's something that you want to add.
The biggest question that probably is being asked is,
how long will it take us, if we are warned that there's a threat, how long will it take us to move from BLOC, basic level of capability, which in fact means that we can do all the search and rescue, we can do interdiction, search and seizure, piracy, etc., etc., but perhaps not anti-air with missiles or anti-submarine warfare. But how long will it take us to move from BLOC to FLOC? And that is defined within our business plan to deal with the escalation of threats. Therefore, if we get warning that there's an escalation of threat, we can move a ship from BLOC to FLOC within an expected time period. And that's more important. We believe that that is in hand. We can move the vessel to the right level of capability if the requirement is there to do so. But then we need to understand that will require additional funds. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I see that Mr. Antoine is ready to deal with that.
Chair, thank you very much. Honourable member, Chair. First of all, I would like to say that I really think in support of what the Secretary said, the Department would really like to invite the Portfolio Committee that we give you a full presentation on acquisition, how it works, how does it look. The problem of acquisition is, sir, is that acquisition, you actually take a project through three distinct phases. Where you actually have a concept phase, then you're going through the definition development phase, and then you're going through a production phase. And some of those phases, depending on the type of equipment, can be over a very long period. Therefore, when you start looking at the medium-term expenditure framework, you see 3 years. Now, typically, the question that's being asked by Honourable Member Mania, if he's going to look now at Byron, you will find Byron is only now in the initial phases, where we are still busy with defining exactly what is the need. And you will hardly find any funds in that specific medium-term expenditure framework. But maybe later on, when we start with the production phase, you'll find the bulk of the money. So if you don't look at acquisition over a period of time, it is very difficult for you. The second thing is, even before I start off to say to you, what is one of the challenges we have? I think we have discussed very important things this afternoon, but unfortunately it's an open session. But things that are very critical is, Barney has indicated there is a shortfall of almost 7 billion, and what is the price we are paying for? One of the prices we are paid for is when we start looking in some of the major projects and looking to see how we can provide equipment to the South African Army. The Army will tell you that probably that they need is for 3 brigades. But the funding doesn't allow them to go for 3 brigades. Therefore, they will reprioritize and they will actually come with 1 brigade. So it is not the need. The real need is 3 brigades. But because we can't afford in the present budget, we scale it down to 1 brigade. And that is the type of implications that you will find within a budget thereof. Typically, the question was asked earlier regarding the flying hours and also the sea hours is a result of some of the budget limitations. So you'll find that in the end of the day. And then the last point I want to make in the budget limitations. If you look at our previous budget, when we were 4.2% of GDP, and now we are reduced to 1.2% of GDP, the result of that is that the industries also start dying. There were certain industries that was running as sustainable industries when the budget was high enough. At this moment, there are certain industries become very critical because we don't have sufficient funds to help them. And it's not a question of just to pay them money. It's a question of a win-win situation. A very good example, we are developing a missile system, and we buy so many missiles. But because we don't have enough funds in our budget, we don't use those missiles for training. The end of the day is, we don't, now that specific industry has developed a missile, but there's not throughput, there's not production of that missile. Now that industry is going down because we can't get money. The ideal situation would be, if we could give enough money for the Navy, for instance, as a large exercise as the Germans, so they could have shot a few missiles, they could train themselves in the same way while they're training themselves, you can carry on and you can support the industry. Just a little bit of the background, but you find it. Now, going through this process, Jeff,
yes,
I want to just give you a bit of insight in the judicality acquisition focus, but with the background I've just gave about the period of the thing. You see there, I have the Army, Air Force, Navy, Common Weapons and Technology. When you look at my division, this is typical what you find in my division. Those are the main areas how we are structured at this moment. So the Army, I've heard one of our members talk about we must keep the Army sufficient budget. I also understand he actually means the Department of Defense or the whole DOD. But what I've got there is specific Army, Air Force, Navy, Common Weapon Systems, where we group a certain few activities together, and then there's technology development. One of the things that's very important at this moment, since we went back to the Chief of Defense Force work session last year, there was a request to say, but listen, within all of these challenges we're experiencing, the Chief has requested that he wants this camp to be reprioritized. Now, this camp is a strategic capital acquisition master plan. And he wants that to be, so it is not completely reprioritized, but within the present framework, this is how we have, go for the priority there. Ultimately, this joint capability prioritization could have implications on current and future acquisition projects. Another thing that's very important, in our department, I'm responsible to help the department to get the right equipment at the best price. So in terms of the, so that we can get the best value for money on the one side, but I don't determine what is the priority. The Chief SNDF makes his own priorities, and that is the capability that you, that supports you with that CJ office. Today, the reprioritization camp working service has been ongoing, and the DOD current capability requirements are addressed to acquisition-focused areas as follows. Now, the reason why we prepared this is because I think in the previous appearance, this question has been asked. It hasn't been answered. We came back again today. I prepared this one. There's following this one, a more sensitive one, where you go in specific what is the project name, so what is the project funds, etc. But unfortunately, at this forum, at this moment, with this open session, I'm not going to share that one now. But we have prepared something like that. Now, what you can see there, there's infantry. And you'll find new generation armor-protected personnel carrier, zone 1 and 2 anti-tank capability, integrated soldier capabilities, infantry indirect fire capabilities. So this is what we say now within this camp is what we will get to get focused for infantry. The armor, a new generation battle tank, but this one has actually been shifted to the right. It was originally given. There was a project registered in the water, but it's not a priority at this moment. Battle tank is not a priority. Air defense, ground-based mobile air defense. You know that GBAT is one of those things that we are working for a long time with now, where we can look how we can have actually a system of short, medium, and long-range protection for the country. And that is where that comes in. Advanced light artillery, that means artillery where you can actually pick up with an aircraft and you can move it with a force for mobility. And then Army Intelligence Battle Field Surveillance. In the engineers, now there was also a question about engineers. When we talk about engineers, we are not only talking about engineers as we know them qualified at the university. We're actually talking about those people that help you to get mobility of your forces. And that's people that can help you with landmines, they can help you with grid building, they can help you with explosives. That is the type of engineers we are talking about here. And there you'll find portable mine detectors. That means that we can go, you know, we all know in Africa, mines are a big problem. And therefore, portable mine detectors is a very important thing for us. A geographical database to know exactly what this looks. Water provisioning. One of the critical things when you deploy forces is to provide those forces with sufficient water. Now, unfortunately, we are losing very easy track about the size of the South African Army. When you start looking at the amount of people you deploy in the South African Army, doesn't matter if it's their vehicles, doesn't matter if it's their water purification, when you start multiplying and what the, all the systems you need, all of a sudden, although it's not as, the acquisition cost of one system is not as huge as a ship, for instance, once you start multiplying that with 1,000 vehicles, or you're multiplying with all of, then you find that this is becoming a very big, and that's why you find that to renew the South African Army, running in hundreds of budgets, actually. So that is one thing, because as a result of sizes, but that's the thing that must be possible. And then militarized moving equipment. It's also a project that was put, and this is a very good example. This project was actually finished almost 2 years ago. I'm talking about all the definitions of these. But there wasn't funds that we could have looked into this. And now it was decided to look at a little bit, not at all, the whole project, but to satisfy certain of the requirements through this militarized earthmoving equipment, so we can help them, because they need some of this equipment now urgently to help them in that task they're doing. Support transportable camping, mass feeding system, again to feed your people once they're deployed in the field. Operation supply support and asset management. This asset management is a typical thing. You will know that every time we'll be getting back now on the annual report and we are being qualified. One of those things is that they say to us, we've got difficulty to manage our assets. And assets, this type of thing is, once you start deploying equipment, how do you know about the equipment? So you want to start putting something on the equipment that can intelligently tell you where's your equipment. So we're talking about the typical start of a device that you can use with a computer and you can bring it to your system. Air systems, conclusion delivery of the Griffins, focus on upgrades of C-130s and the Pilatus. We all know that we're looking now, we are busy with a project on looking at Pilatus to see how we can change the avionics on the Pilatus as a training aircraft, addressing airborne tactical reconnaissance capability, future upgrade of existing helicopters, acquisition of air-to-air, and upgrade. I just want to say, this tactical reconnaissance, there are systems already in place, and some of those systems are directly going to be used in support of the 2010 soccer, because it's something that we have put on the aircraft, it gives a certain visibility, and you can have it at the end of the day.
Sorry,
Anton,
I just want you to
backtrack. I'll try my best now, Anton. Ground facilities, upgrade of the South African ground facilities. There you can see Joint Air Reconnaissance Center, the current intelligence system, air picture display, ground navigational systems, and ground radar systems, and the replacement of airfields. The maritime platforms, conclusion of the final delivery of the Mako frigates and Type submarines. Multi-mission patrol vessels to meet the South African offshore and inshore maritime patrol commitments, as well as to fill the capability gaps left by the phasing out of the minor war vessels. So now you've got frigates, and you want a ship that probably can cover another range for you closer, and that is not as heavy as a frigate, and that's exactly the type of thing that you start looking into now. I'm not saying it is a OPB and it's going to be looking at that side, because we're still in that definition phase where we have to go look exactly what we need. Replacement of aging hydrographic survey vessel. I think we have spoken about Protea, which is also now in 30 years old, etc., especially after the upgrade, etc. Naval system upgrade, replacement of main armor in the 76mm, establishment of a core mine warfare capability, support evolution inspired upgrade of frigates and submarines to ensure the statement of service and submarine warfare capabilities, and support of integration of joint comms projects available to the South African Navy. Communication, now we're getting to this common weapon system, this is under Director IR. Now you'll find communication electronic warfare, static and mobile telecommunications. So the one is your static and your mobile, and then you'll see there's also tactical radios, that is different radios that link into your static and tactical. Joint tactical command and control, and tactical electronic warfare systems. Now, we all know when you get into this one, it's a very sensitive area now, and I mean your algorithms and everything is becoming very sensitive in terms of the defense force. Support high altitude parachute capability and chemical biological defense. That is something that you will say, okay, fine. That is something that you see all the defense forces are preparing to say, if something like that can happen, how are we going to protect our people? So we must start looking at certain clothing that can protect our people in case of something like that. That is not to go and build these things and to attack other people. This is to protect our people. Then the technology, this vehicle self-protection, progress in the area of vehicle self-protection. I think this is technology development, which is very important for us. And then you also see sensors, the technology development work in the sensor environment is focused on the radar performance improvement. Now, I just put up this slide because I think this slide is very, very applicable on this area that we are. Just look at what happened from 2003 over this period now. And have a look. At that stage, there was the ETP, that big blue right there. That was the other special defense account. The red was your operating expenses, and your yellow was your HR, of your personnel expenses. Now, if you look now at that ratio, you will all know at the stage we had this ratio of, say, 40-30-30. That means 40% HR, 30% for operating, and 30% for capital equipment. Now, if we're on here, I think anybody can see what is one of the challenges we have now, is that this cost is increasing, the operating cost is increasing, and there's very little cost actually available, funds available for capital acquisition at this moment. Because your NTP start being phased out, and that NTP money was not given over to the defense to start with the land worth new renewal. Now, if you look at the second slide now, there is the land worth program money, there is the airport money, there was the Navy money. There you can see, there we bought the ships and the submarines. But that is start phasing out now. Here was still an A400 in. And the question I'm going to answer the A400 but now. This cabinet has decided, and I still believe it's one of our better decisions, that we're going to stop the A400. The A400 contract has been stopped, it's been cancelled. We're in the process to get the money back. However, what we must take cognizance of, by the time that we paid that money, the exchange rate was not as favorable as today. So there will be a rate of exchange lost in that one. Second thing, what you're going to find with that thing is that you had certain teams overseas to run this project for us. And that you can see as a sunk cost, so that will be a sunk cost in this. So not all the money that we have spent up till now we will get back. But at this moment, in terms of the contractual agreement, Airbus is supposed to give that money back. You have also indicated, my minister have indicated about last Friday, that we don't say we don't need any tactical airline. All we are saying we need to do the appreciation, and then we will go through the process of the acquisition to see how we will satisfy that. Because at this moment, because we have cancelled it, you won't believe how many of the marketers is on our stoops every day trying to sell the aircraft to us, and that is not the way you'll be doing this business. So I just think, I rushed through this, but I thought maybe I can just give you an overview of where it is.
No. What I was whispering to the Secretary of Defense is to say that we need to come back to the extension before we go. You see the areas that are not clear, which if you look at page 23, the obsolete. For if you look at the departmental receipt, we need to deal with how much obsolete you have and how does that process work towards. You know that there's a question of lead related to cleaning and what is happening in the laboratory. How do you deal with those matters? How do you bring us on board to understand how your procurement is working in relation to those matters?
Thank you very much.
Your BDE, issues of policy, how do you relate to that? How do you access people, internal or people outside, to benefit in the context of your house and what you are saying? But at the end of the day, how much revenue are we collecting? Because I'm definitely so. I know that Mama there in we are with that area there. You need to be able to talk to them so that they can see the benefit as a community that they are. Now, it's fine what you are saying now, but let's give you an opportunity that my office and the sector office within the program would have to arrange that you come back and give us a full insider information about the exactly how things are working. It won't be the big delegation, but it will be members of parliament to understand exactly what's going on. Because, you see, it also goes with the questions that are related to corruption within that division, that what exactly is happening, when people start accusing each other about things corrupt, what has happened, where have things gone wrong, so that you could be able to have a sense of what's going on. I won't allow questions at this moment. I'll leave it at that level and finalize the questions. You see, because I'm also understanding that people have to go back. Some of us have to catch flights tonight. So I'll give the opportunity to rely on it, you think through it, but we'll take the presentation amongst ourselves as to people going through what you have to do. It's a good presentation.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. The next question, Mr. Tata, will deal with it shortly. Thank you that you are sensitive about the time. Unfortunately, I'm one of those people who must fly to Uganda. So I miss all the flights. It will not be possible. I may be fired. Thank you.
Chairperson, I think the
it's a question related to the NCCC. I know every time my face has become associated with the NCCC. but as I said, matters of the NCCC are matters that I would very reluctantly chair want to deal with in this context. I would want the chairperson of the NCCC to be part of a team that talks on this matter. So I would not be at liberty to begin to venture a view on this particular matter. Safe to say that the secretariat to the NCCC, yes, it is an organ that operates within Defense Department, and what you therefore see in the plan is actually a high-level document. You therefore find that in the operational plan of the directorate, it deals with all matters related to its challenges and all of that. But I would therefore not want to get down to final details of that, given the limitation that I have in the plan. Thanks.
But the outstanding question that I think goes with preparation here, which has always been our concern, is how you integrate. You see, fair and square, Secretary of Defense. In the last period, it's always been difficult to get the Secretary of Defense to speak to this issue. Not the details, but how you work with each other. To us, is very much important. The NCACC has always been treated as a non-entity within the department, in even armed squad. And the danger of that is that whatever they do doesn't come into the mainstream. And they then get attacked with no protection to go far. So I'm just saying that, think about that. He is right. We are going to await the annual report, which we are dealing with. Which has been submitted in the press, and that's when we are going to deal with the ministry that presents over the precise of that particular area of work. But it's important that they don't get to be isolated by the department and work apart from the department. And when things are coming back and questions are being asked, it seems as if that one entity that runs loose and that does things on its own with no government. The one thing which is our view here, officially, is a total contribution. That's why we are interested in what they're doing, not just because of the corruption. See, when we deal with the issues of a developmental state, we want to see where our own contribution is coming from. And we need to begin contextualizing the defense industry in terms of creating of employment. If that sequence doesn't follow, nobody will take us serious. And it lacks within the document that what contributions are we making within the social economy of trying to improve employment within the state itself. So that when I know I spoke to one colleague of mine, he said even in terms of the industrial plan, the defense is not being mentioned, which clearly puts you outside the main flow of government. What contributions are you making to assist with employment? And these challenges, you see, if we don't bring them back, you see, that's why sometimes policy also is an important injunction in how and where the ministry is going. Because when you have enough data, you are then able to say within the present environment, this is the contribution that we are making as a defense, as a department. And the industry itself. See, for a very long time, we have left AMD to found a CPS. AMD has got a CPS more than arms core, anything else. And that is a little bit of a problem. If you are talking about industry, we are even a little bit not understanding who is industry. Industry is supposed to be arms core and business. But the broader industry is the private sector. Contribution. And the client, which is the SATF, lesser interaction is taken within all this type of development of what the industry is doing. And that is the force, because whatever happens in the industry, whatever products they are putting together, don't fall into place with what the SATF is trying to prioritize for itself. That's why I'm saying as to craft, whatever you're saying about landlords,
might raise the question which we would have to interrogate ourselves, because it's very much important that where is the client. Let's leave alone a lot of the groups, which is called AMD. AMD is a lot of groups. It's not a governmental institution. It's not like doesn't derive its own mandate for legislation. And if we continue relating to it in that particular way, then its own contribution would seem as if it is contributing, but we can't quantify that particular contribution. I'm just saying that in your presentation next time, think about those issues, reflect on them. Maybe you could give us a better insight of how that contribution is going on and the quantification of the contribution of the department. Let's not hear it from local groups. Let's hear it from you, as the people are having procurement and everything, that what is it that they're contributing within the industry to the economy and also to the employment. So that when we go and creating of job opportunities, so that when we go and present a view, we're able to say, this is what the department, and these are the views of what is happening within that. It's not just about the MSD, but it also has to be about what contribution the MSD, the industry is doing. It equally goes, you see, that's something that is important for us to understand the MCACC. When it does do this transaction, do they create employment or not? But as long as you sell and nothing comes back to South Africa, it creates a problem. If you sell to Zimbabwe, what do we get in return in the country? Those are the questions we're posing to ourselves. And I'm saying that those questions and those challenges, let's deal with them at the stage that you propose to your presentation, if it falls under your effort, with some assistance in some people in the department. So that the argument about the developmental thing begins to make sense to all of us in terms of the industry itself. That's where we are at this particular moment. Yes. Let me give the finalization of questions. No, not you. I know you like talking, so that's all I'm making. That's the way I'm giving you an opportunity. I'm surprising you today, I'm talking too much.
Thank you, sir.
And how many questions do you have?
One.
How long would that take?
I can take 5 minutes.
And you won't answer them.
The first two. And then the legal one, two of defense. Legal services will do. The first one is about the structure. Why is it that the military veterans are not included in that structure? The military veterans department has been proclaimed in December, 28th of December last year, and the DG has been appointed, and he is going to deal with every aspect of military veteran issues. And currently, the military veterans have a directorate within Chibok's HR structure. So the work will not stop. The work will continue. We will continue to help military veterans. But the full department is still being established. And that is why we have given 20 million to the new department to establish itself. And the deputy minister, assisted by officials, have visited many countries to benchmark. And the structure that is coming up, we think, is the structure that will help this country to deal with the questions of military veterans. So I think we should give it a shot, because it's a new department.
Can I?
And they will come and explain.
Can I? You see, by law, when the president said that, automatically has changed the nature of the department. I say by law, no. No, I'm just saying by law that you see, it's normal. It's called defense and military veterans. The organogram was supposed to have changed. That's all we're saying. We've said it on day one. Because on day one, we had a budget vote. And he said to the minister, you need to change your organogram. So
that it begin preserves as it impairs the military battalion. We're not yet dealing with the details. That's what we're looking for. And you know, for a matter of fact, that for a matter of fact, in the organogram, you'll be able to tell us at which rank are you pulling in the DTC that are proposed. You see, you must understand what it means. Is that you've got a chief of defense, you've got a secretary, you've got a military veteran. And this organogram doesn't talk. And for us, in terms of budget, we need to understand at which rank is he entering. Not rank, but in position. This is a difficulty to understand the debate within the defense. The accounting officer is the secretary, the chief of defense is there, and now bringing in the military veteran. Now, if you don't clearly put your organogram together, it doesn't talk, it doesn't explain who is here and who. Let me be frank, because that's what we want to hear. Who is where? So that if you build a capacity of, you see what it means, that this is how the organogram works. The organogram puts the chief of defense a little bit up. And what they will say, this is a civilian secretary. What does that mean? Now, it's always been a tension between the SNTF. Not even here around the world. When the secretary was in the police, the national commissioner is the accounting officer. And for the result, the secretary is not so higher than the national commissioner. But here the organogram is to study. And you know where we are, where I'm sitting to experience that. For me to understand how you are running and how you are involved in tech and how you are working together, and how you are going to put up that organogram. That's the question. That's what we want to see. But I'll tell you with what I know. The chief of defense has reservations about where he sits. Now, if you are bringing in the military veteran, tell us where they are going to be. So that we know exactly who's accountable. Because it's got implications also. At the end of the day, who accounts to who? So all these are the questions we are posing. We're not yet there. No separate doesn't mean anything. This is all under the defense department. It's called defense military veterans. Separation, what does separation mean? Separation has been explained. Because this says that parliament is separate from the judiciary, separate from the executive. This is what happens. It's a constitutional arrangement. But at the end of the day, the executive accounts to us. And that's how the parliament becomes very powerful than the executive, although they are an institution that gets appointed outside. And this is a constitutional arrangement. And we have been able to deal and be able to handle our relationships in a proper way. But if you don't write this relationship, you become invasive, give us the details. We'll continuously come back to this question, but it has to be answered that who is senior and where does that come from? Separation, what does separation mean? It doesn't become separation because you try to change them and put them somewhere outside. Because they're going to be coming from the same part. There wasn't. Oh. That's it. Yeah. I didn't want to come to that. What separation
means? What separation means, I think the proclamation that has happened, it actually says, if you read the text of it, the department shall be established called military veterans. It shall have its accounting officer and it shall have its own budget. So all that it therefore means is that this is a separate department from defense department. There shall be the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans at the top. But under the ministry, there shall be two departments. There shall be defense department and there shall therefore be Department of Military Veterans. And these two departments shall have, each one of them, shall have an accounting officer. So that's why we were saying the budgets and accounting officers would be separate. And the money for military veterans would not have any association with Defense Department. It would just come straight from Treasury straight to the department.
and they will account accordingly. So that is why we are saying, Chairperson, on the structure. You may not necessarily see the structure of Defense Department amended to include military veterans, because they shall have their own structure on the side. Yes, they shall report to the Minister of Defense and military veterans, but it not form part of Defense Department as an entity.
This is a little bit complicated. Let's take it that it's a debate that are going to be, because we have to have at the end of the day, the staff is going to put the legislation together. So you would have to entertain it during that period. But I'm still saying, you know, it doesn't come out clear. I hear what you're saying. So you are saying that separation as far as them receiving their own money. Separation as far as what powers does the DTG have? Is it DTG also? So you are going to DTG, he's also going to DTG. Yeah? Still DTG. That's right. No, no, we'll see that DTG. I'll fight.
No, I'm not fighting.
Okay. You're fine, David.
I wouldn't go that far.
No, that's fine. Let's hear it. But it's a matter that I think we should, as members, look into it. I hear what the president is saying.
I'm not convinced about the story, but
we'll check it out. But somebody has to have come. So, I didn't want this to talk
about that. What is important, the government chair, is the establishment of that department, whether it's separate or not, it's material. As long as it is there and it is taking care of the military veterans, that's the most important thing.
And I agree. But at the end of the day, you know, when it comes to coming accounting to Parliament and dealing with the expenditure, it's going to have a huge implication. But where does that money come from? And how much that? You see, you are saying assist us to increase the budget. What budget are we increasing? Those are political questions that we have to ask. Mm. When you are established, it's going to come to a question that how much are you spending on this department, on that department? You see? And it's going to be us who will have to, because we are monetizing that. So it's not as ABC easier. Establish it exists. So if you say you are going to deal with issues of purchase, issues of healthcare, issues of you need to say to us where that money is going to come from. You know, we need to work that out. You see. So that tomorrow there's no duplication, there's no tension, there's no fighting, you see, about this type of thing. These are both charities. It's fine. That's fine, Alice.
The next question deals with the target. The priority is covered 2010, 2011, and beyond, according to the Minister's priority. Some of the priorities may not be finalized in 6 months or in 12 months. They may go over the financial year. So it is always difficult in many cases to come up with specific targets. As an example, the infrastructure. It is very difficult to say you will finalize this in 18 months because we have to negotiate with other departments. But as listed there, it's a priority of the minister. We have to engage and we have to try to push other people to cooperate with us. But some of the work here is actually affecting other departments, and we have to make sure that we convince those other departments to make sure that they agree with us. So most of the work will be ongoing, but the minister has prioritized for 2010, 2011. This is what must be attained by this department. And we will cooperate and push to make sure that this financial year we finalize all this. And the work that has not been finalized, I'm sure the minister will come back and lead us to redo the work. But this is only for this financial year. And if we do not finish, it will go beyond. I don't know if that...
No, I said both these debates are going to continue in the meeting.
we are going to be this issue of the police, how she creates that. But also this type of, you see, it's a long, it's nice to have a shopping, but at the end of the day, I mean, we know that there's this within government. We need to be able to, we have said initially, we'll have to wait patiently for the minister to come and talk to this type of priority that she's putting forward. So we want to push you to commit yourself. You will commit yourself to the minister. We have got a parliamentary role of negotiating and understanding exactly that this is saying to us that she's going to transform AMSCO where and what exactly is going on. So we have asked the department, the minister itself, to respect that target and bring that.
The next one is status of legislation. Advocate Kouish will deal with that quickly.
Thank you, sir. The DOD legislative program for 2010 was handed in to the leader of government business earlier this year. The program sets out the schedule within which time the legislation should be dealt with. There is a legislation for a defense amendment bill, which was supposed to be in cabinet February 2010, and then National Defense Force Service Commission bill in cabinet March 2010. Those two bills we have already dealt with. And then we have also the Geneva Convention Bill, which will be dealt in cabinet next month, and then Military Veterans Affairs Amendment Bill to be dealt in cabinet in May, and then in June we've got the Military Decision Bill. So we are on track.
We haven't seen them yet. They have not yet arrived in Parliament, so I don't know where they have been.
If
you say that, encourage
cabinet
to bring them to
our
attention so that we can help you to move forward.
Thank you, Chair. We will do that. The last one here is Defense Secretariat status for reorganization. I think if you agree, we should refer this matter. I give us a chance to consult with the Minister so that we don't come back or give you wrong impressions through our answer. I would like to consult with the Minister before responding.
Well done. Accepted.
Yes.
No big deal about it. But I will do it. Do you want to make full one? Can I start with the old man?
No, for me, it's a very clear question. I just put on the mic there. No, for me, I just remember when I was requested for the company to know what the
Chair, my suggestion is, given
the Secretary of Defense's response, I think it might be very helpful if we have a separate hearing with the Ministry of Defense, not only to discuss the Minister's priority, but there are a number of issues relating to the ministry which I think we need to deal with. Thanks, Jay.
No, David. I understand what you're saying. I say I understand what you're saying. Yeah. But the priorities are the main ones that we need to get focused on. But the people, there is Ellen Monica. Represent the minister. Would you please facilitate a day with the minister with the portfolio committee? We've been patiently waiting now. And I hope you have understood what we're saying, that as we're going towards the budget vote, we want to clear our minds, but we don't want to enter fighting. We want to find a positive element and see what are the good things that we could be able to sit and comment about as the portfolio committee with the minister. As I'm even saying, around the issues of the priority, they are quite excellent. She will give us a better set. And also the functionality. You know, I must say that again in my idea. You see, the Constitution derives the powers of
in the constitution are only given to the minister, not deputy minister. That's the constitution. And what does that mean? Is that if a deputy minister is given a department created, what does that imply? That doesn't change the nature of that department. So this question is not a simple separation. I thought we want to hear the separation of power. How does it happen? So that we can deal with it. But if we don't engage you, we are going to engage the minister when she's available. But if she does, we'll leave and we'll see what we do. We're okay. Because by constitution, you can't. It's a constitutional department. And doing a constitutional amendment, that's as easy as like that, it has contributed to this power. And I'm just making that comment. Can I thank everybody? No, no, you proceed. Let me just find out first before politicians speak. The Secretary of Development to say anything.
Sir, thank you very much. First, again, we would like to thank you for creating this opportunity for us to come back and deal with the questions that were raised by the members, honorable members. We really appreciate the opportunity. You are the last hope for this department. We come to you crying, we expect you to just agree, but at the end of the day, to give us political guidance. We appreciate your support. We don't want to take this for granted. And we would like to assure you, as the Defense Force is a national asset, we want to make sure that this Defense Force is ready to protect and defend this country in terms of the Constitution. We will always take your criticism, constructive criticism, and we will build on those to make sure that we build a department, especially the Defense Force, that will be ready to protect our citizens and also to help the country in terms of the international agreement. So we appreciate this, and we are appealing to you to accept our strategic plan so that we can work with this, how we want to operate. And we need your support so that we can move forward. And thank you very much for your patience and also for those issues where you need some more clarity. We are ready to do that. But we're pleading with you to accept our strategic plan. And then we can move forward as a department. Thank you.
Yeah, could I tell us that, you know, something I just want to know. Last year, you know, if I'm not mistaken, on June, July, where I came from, I just want to comment before I'm going to ask a question. You are away with me. And I saw a young girl who was wearing a uniform of army. Now, I asked her, which base are you? She said to me, she's not a soldier. I said to her, now, what about this uniform? She said to me, my boyfriend's uniform. And her boyfriend is a soldier. Now, he, you know, he gives her girlfriend. And the girlfriend going up and down to give people food with a uniform of army. Now, you know, I was confused. And I want to talk to the young man who was sitting there in front of me. And I went there to try to talk to her, why you give your girlfriend a uniform, original army uniform. Now some of them were a little trouble. They said to me, the ANC government is coming, not the court. Now, but my problem is that it is a right to take original of ours to put them in the but my fear that a criminal on the road of Zambia wearing the uniform willing for unbelievable. Now I just find out it's a right when somebody takes the uniform of government. Not all clear, but as a part of the right one and well.
Thank you, Chair. It is very wrong. It should not be allowed, and it is trans. think, military discipline. As soon as we know, the members who are involved in that, Chief of the Defense Force will definitely issue orders to start disciplinary proceedings against the member who actually gave the uniform to his girlfriend. And maybe also, depending on the legal framework, the girlfriend also, in accepting that responsibility, misrepresenting herself, should be could be charged as well. So if you know the names and the area, then make a follow-up on this case. Investigate and punish the offender. It is not allowed.
Thank you. What the Honorable Torres has to do is to work on that case, put a letter together, we'll send it to the Secretary, and then they will do then the Chief of Defense and you will have to be compliant around the case. Not with my
The second Chief of Defense has taken words out of my mouth when he suggested that we should appeal to us to accept this strategic plan. It is important. I was going to suggest that we accept this, we approve of this. There may be a slight mistake here and there which they can improve as the year goes on. But we have got to accept this plan. If we don't accept it, Comrade Chairperson, it means we are stripping the army. The army, the defense force won't be able to operate. They can't operate without funds. We will make keep stripping them naked, actually. That will happen. Balema puna puna, that is so true. So the Kazis. And the Lakani Kazis, we can't allow that. So we have. You don't want me to speak, Comrade Chairperson?
No, I want to.
Why do you keep on saying, in class, in class? I'm not sure. I've got to emphasize this point of accepting the plan. Otherwise, our army can't operate. You always want to cut me short.
Well, you're the first one to complete.
Chair, for all the reasons that the Honorable Mkankeni has made, the Defense Force is essentially car. That's precisely why we should not accept the business plan. We're very much like a board, accepting a business plan that we know will lead to our company falling into non-profitability and eventual failure. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I thought that the debate was closed when we started this meeting. But we didn't have started the whole process of the case. We have not closed it. But that language, you know, secretary, the acting secretary of defense, that is a bit out of order. It's not a debate that is supposed to have come back at all. When I ruled at the start of the meeting, I did say that the plan has been accepted and we're working on a plan that has been accepted. So I don't know why the debate should be open. So I think that let's not open a debate that is not debatable. Anybody who has had questions on anything would have raised those questions when the meeting started. I made a ruling at the start of the meeting, and I said by that ruling that the strategy plan has been accepted and it's moving ahead. There's never been a problem. And I said all people are raising questions, criticism, and we've been working on that throughout the meeting. And I think let's close the meeting with that. Let's not open what is not there. Go and work.
Don't leave the chair.